is us.
Suckers!
Good evening, brothers and sisters of the Leaf, and welcome one and all to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club. And tonight, our favorite crew of inebriated numbnuts deliver their own form of drunken justice as they discuss the shot-on-video 1985 martial arts oddity, Justice Ninja Style, while smoking the Palstani, Connecticut Corona Gorda Justice Cigar, all paired with their usual ridiculous amount of tasty craft beers. And, once again, we have to go along with their bullshit narrative that their excessive drinking is somehow justified. And usually just justified by a stupid punchline like that, Cade. Yeah, whatever. Anywho, it sounds like we're in store for one hell of a good time, folks. So sit back, light 'em up, and enjoy the show.
All right, boys, let me take a little sip of my podcasting serum and get things started here. No notice. Okay. Let me take one more.
Hey, let's all take one.
Cheers, boys. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club, episode 167.
All right, 167. Rolling right along.
We're only two shows away, boys. Two shows away from the big giveaway. You won't want to miss that. Episode 169, that's where it all goes down. Downtown.
What are we giving away? I mean, we've already given away our dignity, so that's...
Yeah, I don't... That's gone. Our self-respect? No, that's history.
Giving away hope? I mean, that was gone, like, in the 90s.
You boys ready to have some fun? Ninja style? No, Yak Boy isn't giving us a shake of the head. No.
Well, actually, Kay, can I just have a minute? Well,
first of all, Yaks, can I? You may. I just want to say it's great to have you back, Yaks. Longtime viewers.
Yeah.
Last episode, episode 166, was our first episode ever where Yak Boy. He had some tornadoes in his neck of the woods, and he was down, no internet, no electricity. He could not join us, and it was not the same without you, my friend. We had to do our own beer research. I felt like during the film discussion, you would have backed me up on so many things, and these guys were just piling on me.
Regrettably, I did miss my first ever podcast, and that's true, and that's... You know, and of course, tornadoes and Mother Nature had different plans. So, you know, I didn't have any internet or power or any of that stuff. So there's no way I could participate. But, you know, anyways, after I got all that back, I decided to head over to the website and check out the beer reviews that you wrote up.
Oh, yeah, because you weren't here. So that's kind of your niche is what beers were drinking. So that makes sense. You wanted to see what everybody was. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, just as a, I thought, you know, hey, I'll see what you had to write and see the thing, and I was like, you know, real quick, I just let me share some things because I mean,
I wrote it.
I know.
In the folks
at home, you know, he did the Zombie Break Painkiller, Turning Point Brewing.
Oh,
and you said you. The tiki inspired imperial sour ale with coconut, pineapple, passion fruit, and orange clocks in at 10.9% ABV. High alcohol content is important detail to remember, as it is perhaps why Tut went from totally hating a sour concoction to declaring it pretty good several points later. Nice flip flop. It's also worth mentioning they didn't detect any of the fruity flavors described by the brewers and the Zombie Break Painkiller is far too overpowering to successfully pair with tonight's cigar. Nice pairing skills, dude. I suppose the fact that our film does have zombies in it should count for something, so I'll factor that into the grade, D+.
But when you were saying nice pairing skills, dude, and nice flip-flop, dude, those were your comments.
No, that's what you wrote. I wrote, I took notes. I brought them with me.
That actually sounds on brand. I mean, really on brand.
So you cut and pasted what I wrote and
yes.
It's been a while. That was a while ago, so I don't really remember.
I mean, I was just, you know, I was, since I wasn't there, I had no idea. And I was just like, well, D plus, that just doesn't.
I do remember Tut hating the beer and several pints later saying it was pretty good.
Yeah. And then like, I went back to hating the beer. It was like, I hated it. It was okay. And then I went to, I threw out the rest of the six pack.
Just remember, Tut, D plus, that's not a grade they like to give out. They give out a lot fewer of those than D minuses.
And it is a D plus.
It is. But okay. I'm like, you know what? I sacrificed a lot picking that stupid zombie beer because it had zombie in the title. So I'm just going to be like Doc and be like, screw the pairings deal. I'm just going to get what I want to get.
Well, again, I hate
I'm just going to get a D plus and a nice flip flop dude out of
well,
this.
Well, the algorithm, yeah. The algorithm is what it is. I can't control that, but I agree with Yak Boy. It could be a lot worse than a D plus.
There's no algorithm.
Well, you know, speaking of the doctor, is you know, he had the Dallas Blonde Ale by Deep Ellum, and you know, yeah. He wrote up and said this session brews can feature the tagline "Love Runs Deep," which certainly and disturbingly applies to the movie we discuss in the second half of our show. Sadly, the doctor offhandedly mentions that he didn't purchase his beer due to any movie tie-in, so the lack of forethought and pure laziness will certainly hurt his score quite a bit. The doctor's lackadaisical attitude aside, he did report that his 5.2% beer hailing from the south side of Dallas was quite refreshing and would pair good with pizza. If the doctor was to order a pizza, it'd be a sausage lover's if you catch my drift. And then you gave a grade of F.
You know, Deep Ellum just closed down their brew house there in Deep Ellum. That's breaking news. Happened a couple days ago. You can't go to Deep Ellum and sit and have a beer anymore. They're strictly a distributor of beers now.
I guess the sausage factory next door is going to close down.
That probably be a question the doctor can answer. He's up there. He's local.
As the responses pass in front of my eyes, I'm going to choose the one that the Terminator did. Fuck you, asshole.
Fuck you, asshole.
Was it if I thought the doctor, if he ordered a pizza, he'd pick a sausage lover's? Wink, wink, just saying. Or what did I say, Yax?
You had, if the doctor was a pizza, he'd be a sausage lover, if you catch my drift.
Oh, if the doctor was a pizza, he'd be a sausage lover's pizza. Okay. And he got a C what?
Yeah. He got an F.
A CF.
An F, just an F.
Oh, just an F.
Not even a minus or a plus, just an F.
Well, hey, I think
that there's something wrong with this.
I think the thing to take away from this, guys, so we can move along into the show, is keep trying. Keep doing what you're doing. Get a little better every time. And, you know, we've only been doing this for 10 years almost. There's a lot of room to grow and to kind of get those scores up. And let's just keep having fun and keep doing our thing.
Well, you know, speaking of doing our thing, I mean,
that'll be the last show I do before I ever have to go to the office again the next day. I can tell you that right now.
Well, now, you know, I finally got to your review of the Irish Cream Temptress by Lakewood.
Hmm.
And the, said here is, last year on, episode 158, Tut drank the salted caramel and really liked it. So I decided to follow with the stout loving footsteps this time around, which was somewhat difficult as I wear a size 13 and Tut has very tiny feet. Just saying. I'm happy to report that the 9.1% Irish Cream Temptress was currently available market-wide is absolutely delicious. As someone who generally steers clear of stouts in favor of my beloved IPAs, I found this variation of the Temptress full of highly enjoyable and incredibly smooth flavors. And as you'll learn from watching, listening to the show, a milk stout makes the perfect pairing beverage for tonight's film. No surprise there, of course. I simply don't know how to do it any other way. And your pairing grade was A plus. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. A plus plus.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of knocked it out of the park. If I can have a moment of kind of humility here. It was a really good pairing. What did I say about following in Tut's shoes? I didn't write that.
You did.
I don't have little feet. Everybody knows I have the biggest feet, the best feet, beautiful feet. Everybody knows this. Everybody, the other day, Ronald McDonald came up to me, tear in his eyes. He said, "Your feet, they're so big. They're so beautiful." I was like, "I know."
Wow. Okay.
You know what? Never before in the history of podcasts has someone been treated so unfairly, so unduly. It's sad.
Well, hey, I drank two beers last time, and I imagine I gave myself a little bit harsher score on my second beer. Am I right, Yax?
Well, here, let me. I do also have that. You did the Bangor Imperial IPA by St. Arnold Brewing. You had with notes of tropical fruit, melon, and citrus, balanced by a soft bitterness and smooth mouthfeel. This Imperial Hazy is a banger. You'll come back to again and again. Well, the TNC's newly anointed resident beer expert, I'll be the judge of that, with a low bitterness, 29 IBUs, and an ABV of 8.4%. This is an Imperial that indeed lives up to its name. It's also a strong beer that pairs well, really well with a cigar in it, and that doesn't elbow any of cigars' flavors out of the way. Tonight's film features several horny house guests who bang all over the place, so it feels like I'm both a cigar pairing expert and a craft beer expert now that Yak Boy is missing in action, presumably, according to the doctor. Yax is hiding at home masturbating nonstop while watching the Weather Channel.
I never said
that. Oh, wait,
that.
I'm sorry. And the pairing grade is also A++.
What was that last sentence? I'm sorry, you read it kind of fast.
Well, there was a reason I did, because you said Yax is hiding at home masturbating nonstop to the Weather Channel.
Well, the doctor said
that. I never said such a thing.
But you did put in parentheses, according to the doctor, which just seems more like it should be iffy.
It's more than iffy, Yax. It's what's known as a fabrication.
Did I call myself the new resident beer expert?
You did.
Neither Tut nor myself called you that, so I'm going to go with yes.
I think if you go back and watch that episode, there was a point where you guys were like, dude, you handled that really well. You should probably be our new resident beer expert.
There was no point at any time in the last episode where I said you handled yourself really well in this episode. From beer pairing, cigar pairing, especially moving pairing, there was nothing that I thought went really well in the last episode.
So would you say that, much like Attorney General Ken Paxton's accusations against the Democrats, Kate is now weaponizing this podcast?
He has totally weaponized this podcast.
Weaponizing it, yeah.
I feel like I'm being gaslit. I don't appreciate it. I know.
No, that's gaslighting. That's gaslighting.
You can't accuse someone of gaslighting that's accusing you of gaslighting. That's like double gaslighting.
I'm triple gaslighting. Oh, wait, no, I'm not gaslighting.
That's like refried beans level gaslighting. And I don't appreciate it, but I'm going to let it slide.
Why am I here?
God, I hope that I've got one of the winning lottery tickets right here. I really do. I really hope I'm holding one of them in my hand.
Take me with you. Take me with you, please.
I pray as well, doctor. Just take me with you wherever you go.
Let me just take a quick we tend to do really good when we quick poll. All in favor of Yak Boy never going back and looking at the Tuesday Night Scar Club website for any reason whatsoever ever again? All in favor, say aye. Okay. It's a draw. We'll come back to that later.
I believe now Tut math has been weaponized.
It's sure good to have you back, Yax.
It's good to be back.
I missed you, buddy. I missed you. And hey, let's just do what we do. Let's forget the beer grading and all the little things that tend to piss people off that I type with my little keyboard. None of that matters. And, you know, that's I do that after the show. I do that after the show because I know you guys don't read it, and yaks, you need to stop doing that.
Whatever. I'm going to go back to watching the Weather Channel.
No, God, Jesus. Things got to be calloused as hell by now.
Oh man, the nor'easter blowing in New England, yaks, could be good.
Our weather's been so tipsy topsy turvy over here lately. I can't imagine what's going on your living room couch. Am I still hanging out with you there tomorrow, by the way?
Yes. Yes, you are.
I'll bring my rain slicker and my galoshes. Well, folks, these guys might not be the best beer pairs in the world, but they try like hell. And, God, I don't know. They call me their shepherd through this madness of craft beer cigar pairing, but
no. It's never been said at all.
Oh, you guys have never called me that. No. Maybe privately message me that separately, individually at times. Either way, what we do here for our new listeners and our new viewers who aren't scared off now by Yak Boy's rogue, just went off the rails craziness. We pair a premium cigar with some tasty adult beverages. And then we tie that all with a feature film. And then we talk about some other stuff as well. It's the most entertaining 3 hours you'll ever spend in your life. Guaranteed. And that is absolutely 100% not guaranteed. So let's get to the cigar. Tonight, boys, I'm very excited to smoke this cigar. What size shoe do you wear, Tut?
I'm not letting you weaponize my shoe size.
We are smoking tonight bear with me on these fucking names, boys. Palstania, Connecticut Corona Gorda Justice by Palstania Cigars. I think I said that right.
Is it a nya or an e?
I think it's a ya. Palstania.
Okay. I'm
trying my best. Luckily, we don't grade on how I pronounce shit.
You won't let us.
I'd be behind you guys in the launch line.
Not if you just write the grades yourself like you do for our pairings.
Yeah, really?
No, boys, I told you that's an algorithm. Uh-huh. You can't fight the cigar beer pairing grade calculator.
I got 10 of these, Tut. I went big tonight. I got 10. 10 chances.
It is a 5.5x46 Ecuadorian Connecticut seed wrapper, Pennsylvania broadleaf binder, and Nicaraguan filler. Palstania is a premium cigar brand created by the Shep and Cabbage Brothers. And they are proud to announce the release of a new size for the Connecticut blend, the Corona Gorda. The new Vitola, named the Justice, it's there on the secondary band, is a tribute to the middle child of Mike Shep and Cabbage. The co-owner and, you know, a cigar hustler, Mike. He owns the Cigar Hustler store in Florida. He has the Cigar Hustler podcast. I'm just going to call him Cigar Hustler Mike, if that's okay with you guys. The co-owner and master blender of Palstania Cigars. Man, we first met Mike years ago. Remember that? It might have been one of our first shows at Romacraft. I think when we did Heat, maybe. Or maybe it was the second one. He was hanging out there and we got to meet Mike. And then, I feel like we've hung out a few other times. I know he came up to me and gave me a hug at the Florida Barn Smoker when we were there. He's a good dude. And hey, we knew him before he was a master blender. So good job on you, Cigar Hustler Mike. A master blender, that's more impressive than a chronic master baiter, Yak Boy. The cigar was original. I'm sorry?
You're the one using the algorithm. I don't know where. What version is it? 2.0?
There is no algorithm, you dirty son of a bitch.
Oh, well, at least you admit that.
Now I do. The cigar originally blended over 9 years ago for the birth of Cigar Hustler's son. At that time, there were only 100 cigars made. The original band said Apollo Danny in blue and pink. Fast forward 9 years later, and the entire Connecticut core line for Pastaña was created solely off that blend. Cigar Hustler Mike had this to say: when working with a factory, I highly recommend you work with a factory that actually keeps records of your blends from close to a decade ago, and can recreate that blend to a T. The cigar is handcrafted at Fabrica de Tabacos Nicasueño SA factory in Nicaragua, the same factory that produces the acclaimed Roma Craft blend. So, man, almost 10 years ago, he made these for his son and then couldn't get it out of his head, went back to the well, found the original recipe, and here we are. Man, Todd, did you get out that cold draw? There was a really interesting... I don't know if it's your sweet raisins, but there's a little bit of a little floral element, and there's a definite sweetness there on the cold draw. Did you notice that before you lit up?
I did not get any sweetness, no.
Very dry, kind of grassy, hay, usual barnyard rodeo shit off the, although no manure, just kind of hay and grass up thing. But yeah,
I got some light hay and grass off the cold draw. I'm missing what, that sweetness, so.
You've actually lit up, Tut. What are you getting off there?
Man, it's far too soon to tell. There is a light, just a light, light pepper, not a heavy black, but just a very, very light pepper across the palate. And the retro hell hasn't made itself known to me, actually. It's very, very easy and breezy. I've been hitting a lot of heavy hitters lately, and this cigar might be a little bit too nuanced for me.
Yeah, boy, there's a mild to medium kind of pepper spice on there for sure, but it's nothing that's gonna kick down the door for sure.
And as I'm sitting here thinking about it, normally that would be an absolute deal breaker for me, but it's actually quite nice. But it's not. I guess like when you get into your smoking preference and you go so far down one lane, and then you have something that's the absolute opposite of it, and you appreciate it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I think that's what's happening here, is that this is so outside of my normal profile. Because even when I go to a Connecticut, I go to a Connecticut that's just a pretend Connecticut. I always go for, you know, like the porcelains, the brotherly kindness, you know, the really heavy, heavy ones, just in a Connecticut wrapper only. And this is more of a nice, man.
Honestly, just a few puffs in, that pepper is starting to kind of settle in the top of my nose. It's kind of starting to hover and tingle a little bit. It took a few puffs to get there, but it's actually, to me, it's presenting itself a little more than it is for you. Yak boy?
I'm kind of getting what you are. I got just a touch of, you know, my lips are tingling on a little bit, but I think that's going to die down. But other than that, I was like, you know, the cold draw, I didn't really get any of that sweetness either. Did get the same, you know, barnyard aromas on the just, but you know, I think that, like you said, that pepper is fairly strong up front right now, but you know, that happens to several, but cigars. So we'll see if that.
So Yagboy's getting a little more pepper forward on the retro than we did. I got it more than you did, Tut. You barely got it. And then I'm getting a really nice kind of medium cedar on the draw with a kind of a cafe, what is it, leche, like a milk and coffee kind of combo there with the cedar.
Yeah, it's weird because I'm actually getting like a black tea, like right right as the exits the palate going into the retrohale, just right in that area.
We're both
getting presence.
We're both getting beverages though. That's we're in sync. You're getting tea, I'm getting coffee. All right. Well, hey, we just lit up. Let me get back to it here in a minute.
By the way, I'll smoke this in about 2 seconds.
Yeah, slow down. I know you will. Slow down. The booze. We also pair our cigars in our movie with some carefully curated adult beverages. Yak Boy, I'm so glad you're back to handle the beer talk as the handsomest bartender in downtown historic Temple, Texas, and co-owner of O'Brien's Irish Pub, which, despite the tornadoes and the hail and everything else, is open for business. Get your ass down there and go annoy Cody at the bar. He loves it. He loves to hear about your life and your problems. Just settle in and man, the guy thrives off of it. Yeah, don't do that.
Oh,
the opposite of that. Just come in.
I hear someone calling for me. I gotta go.
Come in and drink and leave Cody alone, for God's sake. All right. Well, hey, let's start with you, Yak Boy. You missed you. We're smoking the Justice cigar. We're doing our movie tonight is Justice Ninja style. What are you drinking, buddy?
Well, I can't say that I went directly with, you know, a movie tie-in or that, but when I saw it, I was like, I just wanted to bring good vibes. Good vibes, West Coast style IPA. Good vibes.
Nice.
It's by a Voodoo Brewing Company. They're out of Pennsylvania, Meadville. I saw that when I saw that, it reminded me when we took our trip to the Barn Smoker in Pennsylvania. So I was like, hey, that's enough of a tie-in for me. The Good Vibes, it is a West Coast style IPA, 7.3%, says 85 IBUs. And like also, I will have to say that they're trying so hard to say that we're making
full of Schmee.
A tongue burner IPA, but it unfortunately, I would probably put it about 50 or 60. But it's still, it's really good. I did like the way they said it. They had hopped 5 times in the kettle and then double dry hopped to produce bodacious dank fruit notes.
Dang.
And it does have some, it does actually have a really strong floral component. So, and citrus component.
Well, that sounds lovely. But hold on. You said you didn't put really any thought into the movie or the cigar when you're doing it.
Well, no, because I saw the Good Vibes and I wanted to bring that because I missed last time.
F minus. Okay.
You're literally grading us right now. You said there was an algorithm. So which is it?
I have my CPU here. It's an abacus. It's it does things that I can't possibly explain to you noobs. But you like
no,
it.
No, I believe you can't possibly explain.
Yeah, go ahead.
It.
Take a stab at it. Try it. Go ahead.
Is it pairing well with a cigar?
Actually, I do like it with a cigar. Like I said, I should say right now I like it with a cigar because there's such a strong pepper for me that, you know, this is actually kind of combating that.
Man, I'm not
toning it down.
I'm not getting that strong pepper, buddy. I am getting the pepper has settled in and it's found its kind of comfort zone. But for me, man, the action on this thing is on the draw. That cedar and that kind of cafe leche. It's man, I'm finding it to be a very enjoyable mild to medium smoke.
I don't know. Maybe it's just this one. Cause I was, like I said, as soon as I lit up and really I got that real strong blast pepper. I got that little bit of lip tingle and just like, wow, this thing is right there. Right. So,
well, we will report back after we, hear what Tut's drinking.
The good Tut from wonderful Saloon Door located in Webster, Texas. He's having the crispy boy.
Look,
there it is. There it is. The crispy boy.
You know what? I almost as well, Tut, picked out a beer tonight simply because it had a mustache guy on the can. our movie tonight, folks, has a plethora of outstanding mustaches. And, yeah, there was a, actually the same brewer that did my beer, they did one called the Capiche. And it was this Italian dude with his mustache.
I was looking at the Capiche.
And it was an Italian style lager, and that sounded terrible. So I went a different direction.
Oh!
Oh! But yeah, tell us about Tut's beer, Yax.
It is a Pilsner, like I said, from, Saloon Door Brewing out of Webster. It's 4.5% ABV. It's got, zero IBUs, so it should be just smooth, crisp, and clean.
Now, Tut, you've done this on the show before.
He did on episode 154 and 160.
Huh? Yes. No, I did not.
We joked about you being crispy boy like the whole episode.
It's spelled different. That in a different brewery, it was spelled with a C, crispy, one Y, boy, one Y. I think it's like Southern something brewing. This is Saloon Door Brewing, and this is crispy with a K, YYY, boy, YYY. Two totally different beers. I even looked it up.
There's so many crispy boys.
But I did it because it was Crispy Boy, and I remember really liking Crispy Boy, and we had a whole bunch of fun with Crispy Boy. I got this as well.
Dad, as our tradition now, three episodes, I guess, could you change your screen name to Crispy Boy, please? In the appropriate spelling for your beer tonight with K's, I guess. Really? How can they allow that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Apparently, I guess maybe lots of people like the name Crispy Boy.
But if I'm the original Crispy Boy, I'm having some phone calls made if another brewery's coming in with their Crispy Boy.
Dude, it's not the same. You spell yours with a C. I spell mine with a K. Y Y Y.
It's Batman and his sidekick Robin, the Crispy Boy Wonder.
well, we can't sue.
It's pretty much exactly what you think an American Pilsner will taste like. I will say it is crispy. It is refreshing. And I'm kind of in the mood for it. But at the same time, I'm having trouble finding a personality with the beer.
That's the American lager in a nutshell.
It kind of is. But even like Budweiser, there is like this bleh personality. There is. It might not be a pleasant personality, charisma plus one. But you know, this is just kind of, I'm not saying it's beer, but it's a nice, pleasant Pilsner.
I think you're saying you like the original Crispy Boy better because you were a big fan of that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I remember really liking that.
How's it going with your cigar? I can't imagine it's doing anything either way.
Oh, it's going fine. Yeah, it's going fine. I mean, you get a little bit of a Pilsner taste on it. It's a nice, crisp deal. And thankfully, because I always struggle with light and mild cigars, it's not pushing it around at all. They're playing nice together.
After your sour beer last episode, I think it was a wise choice. There you go. D++. What's the doctor drinking, Yax?
He has chosen the wonderful Allstadt Hefeweizen.
Allstadt
Brewing, located in historic Fredericksburg, Texas.
Yeah.
Also home to the Fredericksburg Brewing Company, which is the oldest microbrewery in Texas.
Older than Shiner.
Well, Shiner was never technically a microbrewery. Hmm. When they got going, they were just a full-size brewery. The Fredericksburg Brewing Company, which is very tiny. I mean, it's literally like a one room type situation. But Allstadt actually is a very interesting brewing company. They got started in Fredericksburg and they chose to only brew German style following the Rheinheitsgebot, the German beer purity law.
Water. Barley.
Barley.
Hops.
Hops.
That's it. Those three things, no?
Malts.
Malts, damn it.
Yeah, good job, expert.
Hey.
A CPU in his hand, all right, Tut. Circumcised pissing unit.
Tut.
E++.
Don't talk to Yak Boy like that. He's a resident beer expert, you son of a bitch.
Hey, he's the one that knew that you forgot malts.
Look, he's explained that process before, the German beer process. I got 3 out of 4. I think for me, that's pretty damn good.
D++.
Stop doing that. You don't have an algorithm. Stop
Holy
it.
Double standards, Batman.
Oh, I got an algorithm, my friend.
Oh, yeah. It's just me or did Tut turn into Kramer? Oh, I got an algorithm.
Oh.
I'll say this. It is one of the most impressive looking breweries I've ever visited.
They spent a good deal in time to make it, you know, authentic. I mean, they've got, you know, giant copper kettles and all that stuff. So
I just meant the exterior of the building.
Oh, like yes. I mean, yeah, it does look like a what you kind of would imagine, like a almost like a Bavarian beer hall. So
it's crazy. It's really cool. If you ever go to Fredericksburg, I don't care for the beer, but I respect what they're doing there. Doctor, do you like the beer? That's the important question.
To be honest with you, nothing about it's really blowing my skirt up. It's doing the trick, and the night's not getting any younger, so I'm about to go grab another one. But you know, it's a Hefeweizen, and basically, I think on the can it even says they're trying to make, you know, bread in a can. So I mean,
that's not a selling point.
As a fan of the German style, I actually like their beers. Their light lager is probably my favorite light beer. The Allstadt light lager is we had it at Fritz's place, the Bonaire. They had it on tap, and ever since then, man, I love it on a hot day for that thing. It's nice.
It's good. It goes.
Oh yeah.
Down.
Oh yeah.
It does go down easy. I'll say that.
Would you say it pairs well with a sausage lover's pizza?
I wouldn't know that. I normally, if I have a pizza, I pretty much just get pepperoni.
A big, thick pepperoni pizza.
I don't know. I mean, it is German, so maybe like a big, long bratwurst. Something like that. Very thick and a lot of heft to it. Might go good with something like that.
Yeah. Those bratwursts can be juicy.
Why do you think they serve it at the Bonaire? They got those wonderful bratwurst dogs.
Dude, the Scotty Brat. Those things are awesome. Slathered with some onions and some mustard.
I would like to point this out. I'm sure it will have no effect on your algorithms. But I actually purchased this beer before I watched what you've referred to as a movie. So I really can't have a tie-in. I don't know if that exonerates me. It gives me an incomplete grade, or if I'll just hear some more.
Yeah.
What you've referred to as a movie?
There's
Is that
no
foreshadowing?
Did I say that? Was that?
Yes.
Yeah, there's
calm
no.
Down. Calm down, Crispy Boy Wonder.
No, we don't skip. We don't skip any grades. There's no disqualifications here. All right. Well, I guess that leaves me. Yak Boy, care to fill in our fellow brothers and our people at home with what yours truly is drinking?
The super fun. Excuse me, I forgot. There, the exclamation point. Super fun. Hazy hop. Hazy IPA.
Since there is nothing actually Japanese in our movie tonight, I picked a can with some crazy Japanese text and a, it looks like you could find this in a Japanese vending machine.
D++. And yes, it does look like you can find it in a Japanese vending machine.
I'm filling in the gaps. What we don't get from the movie, I'm bringing in with the beer. Just like I did with Roadhouse. I drank the fresh Kicks IPA because that movie didn't have a fresh Roundhouse kick in the whole damn thing.
That was true. Mm. The Super Fun, it's 7.2%, 41 IBUs. It is made by Paperback Brewing. They are out of Glendale, California. And you should be tasting some delicious Idaho 7 and Simcoe Hops in your brew.
I actually had it as Idaho 6 hops. I'm surprised that it's the 7s, but okay.
Good job, expert.
You know what? The algorithm will deduct what it deems deductible for me miscalculating the Idaho hops.
And reflect it in the X score somehow?
No, his score doesn't go up as mine goes. It's.
No, that's exactly what I was implying there.
It's insular. Is that all we know about this thing, X?
Basically, yes.
I'll say this: it's.
Well, I mean, we had never done anything from Paperback before, so we haven't.
No, we haven't. They seem relatively new.
Yeah, I haven't heard of them.
I'll say this: as I mentioned, they also do the Capiche Italian lager. It's a fine hazy, but I'm almost to that point now where spending 20 something bucks for a 4-pack.
Yeah.
Shiner Brewing here in Texas does at least 3 hazies that hazy IPAs that are better than this, and I could get a 6-pack as opposed to a 4-pack for a little over $10.
But you're supporting the local brewery.
I'm supporting the Glendale, California brewery.
Yeah, and you know, I'm gonna
local Glendale, California brewery.
I respect that, Cade, because you know what? It's almost not like about the money per se. Like I shit money away on a bunch of stupid shit, but I mean, it's just like $20 for a 4-pack. It's just like, are you really? It's not about like being cheap or spending money. It's like, am I really getting value for that? That just seems preposterous.
I'll spend it, but you need to bring it.
Doctor, it's like your lottery tickets. I'm always hoping I'll discover something that's like, God damn, that's good. Yeah. And I'll go back and buy another one gladly. This thing exceeds the $10 six packs. All right. I get why this thing is charging me this, but I find it much more so leans to the side of, okay, that was good, but I'm not going to buy that again for that price.
And that's okay. I mean, we come across this time and time again in the cigar world. You get a $23 cigar, but yet you can name off the top of your head 5 $13 cigars that beat it. You know, it's a good cigar, but it's not $30 worth. You don't have to.
You know what? It's funny. I was talking it just real quick. It's funny what, at least for me personally, the shit that I used to spend money on without blinking an eye in my, you know, 30s as opposed to now, it's changed. And now granted, you know, our economy's in a much different place and my life's in a different place, but it's like I was reminded of this moment in time about 13 years ago, right before my first daughter was born, where I dropped my wife off at a baby shower for my daughter in Austin, here in Texas. And I was just given we'll be done in a couple hours. My only job was to go to the Domain, which is a shopping center in a very kind of high-end shopping center in Austin, and get her this lotion at the L'Occitane store in the Domain and then come back and wait in the car. And when it was my time, I'd load up all the presents and shit, and that'd be that. That's all I had to do. Don't fuck that up. All right. So I drop her off and I go. And when she comes back and I load, you know, the shower's over and we load all the presents in the car and we're driving back. And she looks, she's in the passenger seat, very pregnant. And she looks at the bag on the floor of the passenger seat and she's like, oh, did you get my lotion? And I'm like, oh, I got your lotion. And she starts looking through this bag from the lotion store. And she's like, oh my God, like, what's all this other stuff? And I'm like, well, babe, I was the only one in the store. And the sales lady was like really adamant for me to try some different moisturizers and different, this stuff's from, it's not from America. Like this stuff's, it's all European. And, she starts looking, she's like, how much did you spend at L'Occitane? And I'm like, keep in mind, three kids, a little money to spare, dude. I blew like 150, 200 bucks at the lotion store. And I'm like, what? I'm like, well, you don't understand. I was like, she was showing me all this stuff, giving me all these samples. It was all great. Like my hands never felt so silky and moisturized. So I was like, yeah, I'll take some of that. And I got like entered. I bought enough to be a VIP at the lotion store. And she's like, VIP at the lotion store.
Dude, I'm gonna go ahead and give you the.
Like we're fixing to have a kid, you idiot, and you just spent
$200+.
You just spent $200 at the lotion store, and then I'm start thinking like, oh, how weird is that? Like on a Saturday afternoon, I'm the only random single dude just strolling into the lotion store, and like having this chick squirt lotion in my hand, and like, so yeah, I don't do that kind of stuff anymore, and. I equate.
They saw you coming a mile away, dude. They were like, his wife's clearly at a baby shower. We can get this sap for a couple of $100.
So this is a limited edition. This is made from.
The asshole. It's from Europe. He'll buy $100 worth of shit. This,
rare elderberries are. I better take just two tubes of that. But yeah, but I was like, you know, when you're younger, you don't really think about dropping money on stupid shit. But now, like, $20 for four beers, granted, if I go to let's be honest, if I go to Yak's Pub, O'Brien's Irish Pub in downtown historic Temple, Texas, three pint glasses are going to cost me about $20, right, Yak's?
True.
But I'm in a different environment. I'm with friends. I'm not going to go there alone, unlike the lotion store. I'm going to you know, be enjoying the ambiance in my company. And that's great. But if I'm drinking here in the corner of No Hope in our studio here by myself, you better wow me for 20 fucking bucks for four beers. And unfortunately, the paperback, it's nice, but it's not wow. It's not wowing me. Hmm. But I will say it is staying out of the way of the cigar, which has just started to show me some of the Nicaraguan mineral. Underneath the spice and the medium pepper on the nose, and it's playing very beautifully with the cedar and the café con leche on the draw. I'm really digging the cigar. What about you, boys?
The cedar has kind of picked up for me across the draw every now and then, and I think I'm starting to try to chase it when it's not there. But I got this, just a very light sense on the retro hell of oatmeal raisin. And I thought that was really, really cool. And it comes and goes. It's very light. It's surprising me that I like this cigar because I'm not a mild to medium cigar person. And usually when I do that, it's hard for me to pick out flavors. And man, these flavors are kind of there. The personality is expressing itself.
It's popping for me,
and I'm liking it.
I am too. And construction has been great. I haven't had a single relight, even as much as I've been talking. Look at that burn line. Perfectly acceptable. Yeah, this thing's hitting me in the right spot tonight. Well, hey, speaking of tasty cigars, you know who makes some damn good ones, Tut?
I'm guessing. Let me think. Yes, our friends at Drew Estate.
That's right. Fuck yeah. And Drew Estate has a stick out right now that y'all will definitely want to get your hands on. Following the resounding success of Drew Estate's partnership with Black & Whiskey on the Black & Cigars M81 Maduro to the Core back in 2022, Drew Estate has unleashed the new Connecticut Shade Wrap Blackened S84 Shade to Black. The cigars are a passion project between Rob Dietrich, the master distiller and blender of Black & Whiskey, James Hetfield, Metallica co-founder, singer, and guitarist, and Jonathan Drew, founder and president of Drew Estate. Hetfield and Dietrich work closely with Drew. They've been friends. Drew's been a friend of Dietrich's for over a decade to create the perfect blend for the cigar. The Black End S84 Shade to Black takes aficionados on a nuanced journey with its deliciously smooth and inviting blend wrapped in a luxurious Connecticut Ecuador cover leaf. The consumer experience of this expression is distinctly different from the original, while still retaining foundational qualities of the M81 due to the Connecticut River Valley Broadleaf Maduro binder and Nicaraguan Maduro and Pennsylvania Broadleaf Maduro filler leaves. James Hetfield of Metallica shares his excitement, stating, "Shade to Black is more than just a cigar for us. It's a celebration of passion and a tribute to the craftsmen who strives for excellence in their lives. We reviewed this cigar back on episode 165 not too long ago and rated it an impressive 92. It was our first 92 of the year. It's so damn good, it will almost make you forget about the Black album. Almost." Well, boys, now's the time for the portion of the show where we do a roundtable wrap-up of some of the things we've all been viewing and reading recently so that maybe you at home get your interest piqued, check out some new stuff that maybe you weren't aware of, or perhaps you're on the fence about soaking in. We call it the fire pit. And, Doctor, you're first up here, buddy. You're in the hot seat.
All right.
Doctor, my fellow sports fanatic, you recently took in the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary titled "I'm Just Here for the Riot," which apparently has nothing to do with the tragic 2003 incident at the Golden Corral Buffet in Ding Dong, Texas, when they ran out of sausage biscuits and gravy and Tut went absolutely ballistic on the poor staff.
Two separate events, that's correct.
That's a different story, correct?
I paid my time for that.
Hey, we're all worthy of redemption, my friend.
Yeah, you keep bringing it up over and over again.
F minus. As a person. Sorry. I didn't mean to say it out loud.
No, I'm sorry. I got triggered, Doctor. Go ahead.
let's get it all out there. That's what it's all about, right?
I don't know. Maybe it's Tut's fault for hanging out in Ding Dong, Texas. What the hell? What good's going to come there?
It's Ding Dong, Texas. I don't want to know.
Biscuits, man.
Not that
Why
bad.
Why you give me shit about the sausage biscuits?
Well, let's see if there's anything that links one riot to another. We can compare the situation that happened. And Kate, was it Golden Corral or was it a sirloin stockade?
It was a Golden Corral. The sirloin stockade incident was you, Doctor.
I don't recall it. Anyway, let's as Kate mentioned, this is part of the ESPN documentary series 30 for 30. I happened on this randomly. What I saw that I really liked, so I went back and watched the entire thing start to finish. So I'm Just Here for the Riot, documentary directed by two young ladies who are from Vancouver, Asia Youngman and Kathleen Jamie. And I mention their names because they do an outstanding job making a documentary film here. I'd be interested in whatever else they've done because when you start thinking about different things and drawing different conclusions, and obviously a documentary really is a think piece, right? More than any other film, it's intended to make you think about what happened and in a specific historical event, and they really do that very well. Even made me for a nanosecond think about something that I wouldn't have thought about. So they definitely deserve credit for that. And I'll get into that. I could blather on about it forever, but I'll try to be concise with it. So basically, the gist of it is that in Vancouver, British Columbia, I believe, is a province in Western Canada. In the summer of 2011, almost 13 years ago to the date, because it was during the Stanley Cup finals, which I believe they're having now.
Yeah.
Vancouver was playing the Boston Bruins, and they lost Game 7 of the Stanley Cup finals. There had been a downtown watch party, which, you know, happens in major cities, I guess, where they have, like, you know, big television screens and estimated 50,000 on the low end, 100,000 on the high end. People, mostly young, were in this downtown city center in Vancouver watching Game 7. They lost the game 4-0, and hence the Stanley Cup championship. It's pretty evident that they were going to lose. The crowd started to grow restless, and it resulted in a riot. No one was killed, thankfully. I think there were like over 100 people that were taken to hospitals for various things, but no one got killed, which when you watch the footage of it, it's pretty amazing. It's about $4 million in property damage. So the documentary touches on two different things, in my opinion. One is conditions for a riot. What creates a riot where people go that far out of control? And the other thing is, this being in 2011, the postscript of this was referred to by the police and other people in retrospect years later as a social media riot, because this was the first situation where, in the footage, everybody is holding up either an iPhone or a BlackBerry or a digital camera. You know, Cade, we used to have those digital cameras. Yeah. So everybody's recording the shit out of it. And people are posing in front of cars they've just set on fire and windows they've just smashed, taking pictures, smiling, clear, no identity concealment, oblivious to the idea that all of these people shooting them are going to go put it on their Facebook page or MySpace or whatever was around 2011, and that they were going to easily and forever be identified. One guy is there filming it from a TV station with a big camera, and when rioters see him, they chase him off. And they interviewed him today, and he was like, it's funny, because if you look, everywhere people are holding up phones, and she's like, there's thousands of cameras. If they chase me off because I had a TV camera. And so that was interesting. And then that led to the fact that because these people were easily identifiable, and people are posting it on the internet, you know, I mean, it's like, hey, Cade, you just set that cop car on fire. Take a picture. And right in front of the cop car, you just set on fire. Or
prove it.
People bashing windows in and say, it's
that's ridiculous. Hearsay. That's hearsay. As I pictures of me dousing it with gasoline.
It's that bad. It's real. And so then the flip side of it, right? Well, as these things get posted on social media, boy, did these people get. Many of them, because no one was killed. Now, were people that were fighting, and I, you know, there's nothing that can condone violence or really anything these people did. But in addition to the criminal penalties they faced, many of them lost their jobs. One guy was like a 20-year-old, like professional ex gamer, like mountain biker, dirt biker guy. They show him posing in front of an overturned car. He wearing an Oakley t-shirt because Oakley Canada was one of his sponsors. They all dropped him within days. And he lost. Yeah. They all lost their jobs. But then apparently because they had their photos out there, like the backlash just continued and continued to where these people were like receiving death threats and it just would never go away. Like for years later, they almost like had to leave their lives behind and go into hiding. And that's the part that for a second, because they did what they did, and I don't have sympathy, but for a second, it made me see that, like, oh, wow, you got punished. You have a criminal record. You paid your fines. and it's still going on years, or it still went on. It's now it's done, but it's like,
yeah, some jackass podcaster keeps bringing up the sausage biscuits. I understand.
So yeah, there's it made, that was a thing where I said the filmmakers did an outstanding job, because for a second it made me think about that.
But I mean, sympathy with that. I mean, that's, nobody deserves death threats. I mean,
but that shows you just how stupid, and I'm being nice.
No, that's a key word. I've had a lot of time to think about this documentary, and the word stupid comes up a lot.
Well, no, but that's what makes you realize just how stupid the January 6th folks were at the Capitol. That's 10 years beyond 10 years later. They know phones are a thing.
They know social media is a thing.
They know everybody's recording everything and posting it everywhere. And they're still breaking windows, kicking cops in the nuts.
What's crazy is instead of somebody else posting it on their timeline, these guys are posting it on their timelines.
Yeah, and they're not exactly, Todd. They're not even waiting for somebody else to post it. They're like, look at me about to blast this cop in the nuts as I hold my Blue Lives Matter flag. Like, dude, that's stupid, like imploding upon stupid. It's so much stupid. It's so stupid.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because there certainly are analogies to be drawn from this and the January 6th riot. Before the social media aspect of it, which to your point, Cade, shows that no one's learned anything there.
Yeah.
You know, I've done a lot of thinking about this, and there is a thing, a phenomena known as groupthink, or in this case, a mob mentality or herd mentality.
Sure.
But that exonerates no one from what they did.
Sure.
And it also shows that people that are susceptible to a herd mentality or a mob mentality are either extremely weak-willed and or very dumb. And frightening how many of those people are out there.
I kind of disagree, because...
Says the guy who went to Ding Dong, Texas.
I understand, like, first of all, I think any type of rioting where, like, if you're smashing up a downtown because your sports team lost, you're a pathetic loser.
One other thing in there, Tut, too. I want to hear what you were saying, but there's one other thing that these people did. They looted. They smashed the windows of downtown department stores and stole clothes. See, they have young women stealing pants and clothes. They did that as well as set police cars on fire and stuff like that.
It's the same thing. Like, I understand, like, if you're riot, like, if you're protesting police aggression and it turns into a riot, again, I don't excuse rioting, but what I don't excuse even more is the fact that you smash your own local businesses that are there in your own neighborhoods. That's not cool. Your sports team lost, so you're going to trash your own downtown. You're not going to Boston and trashing their downtown. You're trashing where you hang out.
No, that's what I've always said. The victory parade for a celebration, like a Super Bowl winning team, should take place in the opponent's hometown, and then you wreck their downtown. You destroy their businesses. You overturn their cop cars. It's like, not only did we beat you on the field, we just burned down your fucking infrastructure. We win, assholes.
But I do think that there is some power to group mentality, to group think, to herd mentality.
I don't deny there's power to it.
And I think that it's easy to get caught up into that. I think that smart people can easily get caught up into it just as much as dumb weak ones. It's the same reason why people post absolute BS on social media. I mean, I know really smart people that post the dumbest conspiracy shit.
Maybe you've overrated them.
But Ted, don't you think the main reason behind that is loneliness? Don't those people, aren't they some of the loneliest people you know? And they just,
I think it's a sense of not being able to affect anything.
I think, like,
A riot is violence. That's different from your postings and your opinions. Riot is violence. When you're talking about this is mayhem. This is violence.
And to their credit, I mean, they did get out of the house.
Yeah, that's true.
It's easy.
How do you feel about this? One guy, there were a few people, a few Samaritans on the scene that tried to stop people.
They were killed.
Bad idea, jeans. One guy is like trying to defend the store, and he's got like this pole, and he's trying to push people back, and they get him on the ground and start kicking him in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't, there is certainly power to it, because that's how Adolf Hitler came into power. There is certainly power.
I was about to say, that was an entire country.
I just think, I've drawn a lot of bad conclusions from this philosophically, because I think that there are bad people that are out there that are ready to commit mayhem. The only reason they don't is because there's a law telling them they can't. I think there's a lot of guys that their main frustration in life is that they just can't punch their way through life. They'd be punching us left and right if they could get away with it. But then I also just think that I have a disagreement. I think when it comes to mayhem, when it comes to smashing windows, lighting cars on fire, that kind of stuff, I think that by and large, we are dealing with the weak-willed and the dumb. And there are a lot of them out there waiting to be told what to do and swayed. It was a negative conclusion that I drew from it.
Man, I just think the root of a lot, and we'll move on, but I'm glad you brought it up, Doctor, because I do think it's very timely with some of the shit we're seeing today. But I think a lot of these people are just fucking lonely. And when they see an opportunity to be a part of something, even though it's fucking crazy and stupid, they just, the tiny bit of being cheered on, even by strangers.
Yeah. It's intoxicating.
Yeah. No one's ever cheered me on about anything. And here I am, you know, setting fire to a cop car and they love it. Yeah. Like it just goes to reaffirm what we've said, I think, here for years, is that, you know, probably the most harmful thing to society in our lifetime is social media. The harm, the danger, the consequences far outweigh the good of sharing your little happy pictures with family members. It's not a fair trade-off what it's given us in return.
I agree with you. I think there's something, like I said, the two parts to it, because I think there's something to the fact that they just had 50 to 100,000 people that outnumbered the Vancouver police like 75-1, and there was a breakdown of law and order, and people just went nuts, and it showed me how susceptible people are to going nuts, and we have even more recent examples, and it's actually kind of frightening.
And I'll also say this. Canada has a very, here in the States, a very, we have the impression of them as these kind of peaceful, non-confrontational, folks that live up above us.
Not with their hockey.
I bounced at a bar in Central Texas when
you get some beers in them and it's go time, hoser.
After college, fresh out of college, I used my psychology/philosophy degree to bounce at a bar, Dalton style, in South Texas. The same year they brought in a Canadian hockey team to play down here. And those dudes look for any reason in the world to take a swing at somebody. And here's the difference, though. In America, it's personal. You go into a bar and you take a swing at somebody. It's kind of a sport to those guys. Like the night's not complete unless they swing at dudes, and they don't care who you are, and they don't really have any animosity towards you. They're just jazzed up to fight these hockey dudes. But ironically, the hockey riot didn't have any hockey players in it, so I don't know what to make of that.
No, there were a lot of, and I think that there were a lot of just, yeah,
There were a lot of people that just their faces just didn't look good. There was a lot of, okay. You know,
Well, contorted
into grimaces of just animal, like Lord of the Flies. I've lost my humanity because there's flames and darkness and windows breaking, that kind of thing.
Considering that Vancouver got blasted 4-0 by Boston, it's debatable whether Vancouver has any hockey players there at all.
Man, you keep those words in Ding Dong, Texas, Tut. You don't take them up to Vancouver.
I'm joking.
I recommend if you see it on ESPN to check it out. If you have ESPN Plus, it'll be on there as part of that package. But
I told you I was skimming through channels after you texted me that. And when you texted me that, I was like, oh, I actually caught some of that. And it was engaging, the footage. And so
it sounds like a very thought-provoking piece. And I love documentaries that make you think.
I would urge you to check it out if you get a chance.
Good.
Well, dude, thank you, Doctor, for bringing a little bit of intellectual insight and the documentary side of things to there. On the flip side, Tut, you watched a Godzilla movie. How was that?
Man, actually, it was really good.
First of all, it's Godzilla Minus One on Netflix. I want to preface this as, I mean, you guys know me. I'm a huge horror movie fan. I've never been able to get into King Kong or Godzilla for the life of me. But everyone who I respect as a horror writer or a journalist or whatever swears that even compared to the original, the old school Godzilla Minus One is a Godzilla masterpiece. Enough to where I actually added it to my watch list. I'm going to watch it. Tut. Do you agree? Is it the best Godzilla movie you've ever seen?
No.
Okay.
But it's fun.
Oh, you like that one with Matthew Broderick, right?
I mean, first of all, I am not a Godzilla aficionado. I don't know the lore. I don't know the history. And frankly, I don't care. All I want is a good movie where a monster comes in. I really have only one draw line in the sand when it comes to Godzilla. Get the roar right. Get that very end, that at the very end of the roar. If you nail that, I will forgive you anything. And this movie was fun. It was very fun. I didn't like the
I heard it was sad and tragic and like I never heard anyone refer to it as fun.
Oh no, I am a huge Godzilla aficionado, by the way. Thank God. Now I can just unpack all this.
Tut,
you're here to listen.
Tut, mute.
He's
mute
been storing this up for months.
Tut, if you could mute yourself, please.
No, it was what he means. And it is fun, but yes, it is also, you know, it isn't just like your standard monster movie. They do give it far more human element. You know, the lives of the people on the ground, so to speak. Godzilla doesn't just appear out of the water and start smashing everything. They do give you that human element. So yes, and it in this instance, you know, they do have a go more in depth on the characters as it's just after World War II and all that. But you know, I liked it. Like you said, I am kind of that same way with Godzilla. If you don't get certain aspects of the creature correctly, I'm just gonna be like, you're worthless. Let's get out of here. And they hit all that mark. And the really thing was, is that they won the VFX award. Because if you look at the way they did Godzilla, it was as if they took the original, you know, the way the guy in the rubber suit and that sort of that, just the texture of the costume, and they gave that to, Godzilla. He looks like it's from, in a way, it's like it's updated, but he still looks like he's from the original 50s movie.
There was when he walks, like on land and he actually walks, I actually thought it was an animatronic that they put together. Yes. It's extremely robotic.
When they did that, and that's why I liked it so much, is that it was just an update to the original. I mean, they wanted to say, like, let's make it as close to the original, but let's use you know, the full, you know, CGI package that we can get. And, you know, from the, just the look, I mean, if you like, you know, there's scenes in the movie where like you're looking directly into the, into his, in Godzilla's eyes. And yeah, I was like, it looks completely fake. I mean, yeah. It looked like the little, you know, teddy bear eyes just shoved in the costume, but they, you know, they did everything else right.
I really liked it. I am not going to apologize for my love of kaiju films, and I don't care whether they are, it's just good popcorn movies for me, and I enjoyed on the back of the day.
So that's a thumbs up from both Tut and Yaks.
Oh, yeah.
I think we need to find out, however, that Tut's Godzilla sound effect was a cross between Chewbacca and Bruce Willis's orgasm, The Color of Night.
No. I actually thought Chewbacca, Doctor, but then now that you mention it, it had a very, very strong essence of Bruce Willis orgasming in Color of Night. Doctor, could you give us an example of that?
Let me see if I can do that real quick. See, it was those two things together.
Yeah. Okay. Tut, I can't believe I'm even mentioning it. You also watched some sci-fi movie with J-Lo?
I had to, for science. And all I will say is don't watch it.
Okay.
The tech is really good. The sci-fi aspects of it I thought were interesting. It is a little cliche. AI gets mad, takes over, wants to destroy humanity. Little cliche. I don't know whether there was a twist or not, because I bailed on it about 40 minutes in. That's all I could take. J-Lo is so uncharismatic to me. I do not get the appeal. It's hard. You know what? Just gonna leave it at that. I don't appreciate her acting.
Well, let me, I'll inform our listeners and watchers. The movie's name is Atlas. I think it's a Netflix movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I
and it was like in the it was like in the top 10 of Netflix.
But dude, here's where I question my drinking. I could have swore you texted me one night, just watched J-Lo's new sci-fi movie on Netflix. Not bad. Like,
no,
good,
not like at good, all.
Good visuals. I'm going to go back and look, because I think you were like, maybe you watched it drunk and you were like, actually pretty good CGI, good story. Like, I think you said the opposite of what you just said now.
No, there's no way. There's absolutely no way.
All right, we'll see. Oh, I'm going to find out. If you did,
that's deleting right now. So just watch Atlas. It was great. Loved it.
That would be the funniest. Hold on. Oh, dude, I think I found it already.
No way.
Oh no, I got all right. I imagine that, because I drink a lot too, like you.
You gotta imagine that, because there was nothing redeeming about the movie, and like I said, I quit 40 minutes in. It just it's not I'm not afraid to finish bad movies. I mean, this podcast is right. A year's history of me finishing bad movies.
Of course, but you're forced to in this, and I like the fact that when you're at home, you it's enough. So I'm going to bail out on this. Well, summer vacation is now in full swing for my kiddos, so I've been watching a bunch of kid stuff. But thankfully, it's not all total garbage. I can't believe I'm saying this, but over on Paramount Plus, they are currently the streaming home to all things Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, yeah?
I can't believe I'm saying this. It's actually a good thing. I never played Sonic. I'm not a gamer. I never played Sonic the Hedgehog on Sega or whatever it was. But I left my kid, my youngest daughter, wanted to watch it. So I watched it with her, the first one. And it was so refreshing of all the kid shit I have to watch. And the reason why, and especially after watching Sonic the Hedgehog 2, I'm going to say this. Pay him what he wants. Every fucking kids movie from now on should star Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Because
Jim Carrey plays the bad guy, the villain in Sonic the Hedgehog and Sonic the Hedgehog 2. He's so good. He's so entertaining. He's so, like, Ace Ventura wasn't a fluke. That was a choice he made to go that crazy, that big. He does the same thing here, but differently.
Is this live action or animated?
Yeah, live action.
Live action.
Well, Sonic is CGI, but there's a who's the guy that plays Cyclops in the X-Men movies? James Marsden.
Marsden, yes.
It does have that. You know, everyone else is real, but Sonic is okay. Put in the CGI. Dude, Jim Carrey steals this show. That he doesn't chew up the scenery; he chomps up the. In a good way. He is, and it's all very much adult jokes that he gives that kids would never get. It's just there for the parents' benefit, the references, yeah. And oh my God, dude. And then they just released a 6-episode series, Knuckles, which is one of Sonic's little characters or whatever. And that's really funny. Like, iCarly level, you can watch this with your kids and it's enjoyable. Like, man, I didn't know anything about Sonic going into this, but Jim Carrey should be in every kids movie ever made till the end of time. I know he retired and supposedly he's done, but pay the man. As a parent who has to watch kid shit, pay the man whatever he wants to get him in every kids movie. Yax, you said you saw the first one. Tell me I'm wrong. He's brilliant.
Oh no. He's easily the best thing in there. I mean, you know, I played Sonic growing up and all that stuff, but I was just like, all right, I'll go see it. I'll see what all the thing is about. And I was just like, how, you know, about 15 minutes in, I'm like, this is terrible. And then, you know, they finally introduced Carrie's character and I'm like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, he, like you just said, he just, for whatever reason, it's like he, you know, We just want you to come in and play this goofy video game villain. And he's like, no, no.
Any other actor would be like, all right, I'll be goofy for a couple $1 million. Dude, he overextends even Jim Carrey, like, to make it something special. Like, the dude is just a pro. And he ended up walking away a hero for the – dude, he's so good. Go check it out. Even if you don't like video games, even if you don't like kid movies, it's if you're a Jim Carrey fan, it's worth it. Right, Yax?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
I also watched, two new, very popular movies on Netflix. The first being Under Paris, a by-the-numbers shark flick, in a good way, by the numbers, especially compared to – I watched another – very recent flick, 2024, is Something in the Water, a boring piece of shit, which stole $7 of video on demand money from me. Under Paris is good. I recommend watching it with English dubbing. It's a pretty good dub, and it lets you not read the subtitles and pay attention to the sharks because the sharks are kind of fun. I give a thumbs up to that. And then over the weekend, I watched Hitman, starring Glenn Powell.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
He plays a college professor who moonlights for local law enforcement as a pretend hitman to lure people into acquire services before the cops swoop in and arrest them. Tonally, it's all over the map, which can be fun and interesting in the right hands, but this time it just came across as not knowing what the fuck it wanted to be. Really go for it humor, but then they tried to do some serious shit. It's like, no, like they didn't get a balance right. And it also had some of the most head scratching, you know, my wife, she doesn't pay attention to musical scores and music. She's not like us. She doesn't overanalyze everything to death, but even she was, I'm like, he's sitting there with this hot chick. I'm like, is that music the most inappropriate musical score? She's like, yes. Like, it took me out of it. Like, it's directed by Richard Linklater, Days of Confused. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
kind of should know better, but it was just, it didn't know what it wanted to be. If it wanted to be a comedy, if it wanted to be serious, and it just kind of became a harmless mess of a movie that, unfortunately, you know, Richard Linklater, former Sam Houston State University scholarship baseball player, I can't recommend it. It didn't know what it was.
Okay.
And
I was actually looking at that.
It was kind of a waste of time. But, yeah, boy, I was talking about Sonic the Hedgehog earlier on Paramount Plus. You discovered something on Paramount Plus that's actually worth watching, the series Evil.
Yes, indeed.
Tell us about it.
Well, it is a sort of a paranormal religious type thing where they're it has that sort of like the X-Files, but it's taken from the advantage of like demonic possession, exorcism. But it's, you know, one of those where it always leaves you with the, you know, it's like it's real, but then it's not, or at least it's not to the characters who are investigating the possessions and stuff like that. And so it sort of, you know, it does kind of give you a plausible reason as to why it isn't real. But yet you also have the fact that, you know, it is, because then it makes you question the people and the demonic things that you do see. Is like, well, wait a second. It is real, right? All this is really about demons. But then they give you these explanations where you're like, yeah, it's not real at all. And so you know, and unfortunately it's on its last, it's just started its last season.
Yeah, they're wrapping it up.
But, you know, they've had, you know, good actors. The writing and effects have been top notch. And, you know, this last season, the nostalgic part of me is that, you know, they did bring in, Wallace Shawn to play the head father for the religious group. So, you know, I was big fans about that.
Who's Wallace Shawn?
What? Played Vizzini, Princess Bride? Sweet Wallace Shawn?
Never engaged in the land war in China?
Yeah.
I've never seen The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
You would recognize him. He's been in just a ton of shit.
Have fun storming the castle. Is that what that's from?
No, that's Princess Bride. But that was Billy Crystal.
Oh, my wife says that every night when I come out to go do the podcast.
It's got Carrie Ewells.
Yeah, I like Carrie Ewells. I just never saw Princess Bride. It seemed a little light.
Andre the Giant? I mean, come on.
It seemed a little light in the loafers, which seems weird. It seems weird after you mention Andre the Giant.
Fred Savage from the Wonder Years. Is that light in the loafers?
I thought he was canceled.
Oh, I don't know. No, he played the. Is he?
Yeah.
He's been on a show that was canceled. Quite a few of them.
It's got Columbo.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, I've watched. I've at least seen the first season of Evil. It's got our man Luke Cage in there, and I always like him. I liked it. I thought it was.
I always thought that guy was better than what Luke Cage gave him.
Well, I don't blame him. I blame Netflix.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of money on Daredevil, and they didn't spend as much money as they should on Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
Well, they should have given all the Iron Fist money to Luke Cage because Iron Fist was a fucking doofus.
That's my whole point. Like,
all right.
They just did not follow through. Because, like I said, they spent all the money on Daredevil because they threw Punisher in there. They gave nothing to the other guys. The actor Mike Coulter, he could only carry it so far on his own. He did an admirable job. And he's doing a really good job in Evil, I'll say that.
Very true. Well, boys, those are all good recommendations from a million different directions. Real quick, I am going to end this cigar before we even get in this movie. I think Tut and I are almost identical. You're a little bit before me.
Oh, I've been nursing this thing. I'm a little under half.
You know what? Our last episode, we did the Warp 1988 series cigar. And I looked at its singular profile as a negative. I see this cigar's singular profile as a positive. The cedar and cafe con leche, the coffee with milk, the pepper and the Nicaraguan mineral, it is, I have, every puff of this thing has been highly enjoyable. I wish it was a bigger cigar because it went so fast.
Yeah.
But I have really, really enjoyed this cigar. How about you boys?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, it's been very good. That pepper blast that I had at the beginning completely died down, and it really just sort of mellowed out. I'm, like I said, I'm just a little over half now, and it just, it's been nice. It's been consistent.
Yeah, it's been consistent in a good way. You, right, Ted?
Yeah, well, I think, it has a singular profile, if you will. It kind of amps up in intensity. It definitely gets up to the medium size towards the end here. The cedar is more prolific. It, to me, it's a wonderful cigar. I could definitely easily see this as a, because for me personally, I like to have a heavy hitter at night. But this would be a great midday cigar. It'd be a great lunchtime cigar. I'm surprised that I actually like it, to be honest, because like I said, I'm not that big into the mild medium cigars, and a lot of times it's because, you know, I hear everybody be like, oh, it's so nuanced. Yeah, it's so nuanced, I can't taste anything. But the personality of the cigar and the profile of the cigar is really forward facing, and I was able to pick up and differentiate a lot of things, and I appreciate the personality that it showed me. So yeah.
And perfect construction. Great, smooth draw, straight burn line. I had to relight once. That was on me because I hadn't paid attention to it. Man, I like this Connecticut a lot. And I agree with Tut. Like, morning coffee, noon coffee, afternoon coffee break, this cigar would be...
Evening coffee. Midnight coffee.
I drink coffee all day and all night, and this cigar would go fucking great with coffee. But it didn't. It certainly didn't clash with my super fun hazy hoppy beer either. It played nice with it. Yeah, dude, I like this. It's one of the better Connecticuts I've had in quite a while. Anybody want to guess price point?
Oh man, I'll go.
Keep in mind, this is from Master Blender, Mike the Cigar Hustler.
I'm still going 1085.
I'm going to go to 1250.
Wrong. 1350. I think that's right. Is that right? Yeah,
1350. That was actually my first.
You guys always go high. This is the first time you guys have gone low in a while. Is it because the duration of the smoke is such a small smoke?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, it's weird saying this because I like the cigar a lot. But $13.50 for such a little cigar? I don't know. I wish it was cheaper because I'd smoke a lot more of them. I mean, how long have we been smoking this thing? About an hour?
Yeah. About an hour and a half, actually. It's not.
So, I mean, you know, that I always compared to beers. Hey, I could drink a beer. Two pints cost me $16 for an hour and a half, but this didn't even last me an hour and a half. I would smoke this again because the construction, and I really enjoyed the flavor profile.
I like the fact that it's outside of my normal preference. And when I'm looking for that change up, I'm looking for that, you know, that slow change up to confuse the hitter. It's a perfect cigar for that scenario.
Yeah. I think Mike just needs to get with Skip and get these costs down, the production costs down, and get this thing in the $11.50, $12 range, and we're going to be a little more comfortable by. But let me tell you this. This might help. While these samples were submitted to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club for review, you can go right now to famoussmokeshop.com, grab a box that's currently on sale. They're 10% off right now. On top of that, discounted price, use promo code TNCC20. You get an additional $20 off. I think that might knock it down to the price that we're comfortable with.
Yeah, math, man. It's wonderful.
Yeah. For once, the algorithm works out in you guys' advantage. I like it. I unlike Tut, I have, over the last while, I've been smoking way more Connecticuts and way more mild to medium smokes. And, man, this thing played some really nice notes for me. I like it a lot. So, yeah. The Justice, go find it. Well, folks, that brings us to the movie of the hour. Justice, Ninja Style. And I know I said that like there's a comma after Justice, but there's not. It's just Justice, Ninja Style, 1985. Written for the screen by director Marvin Trammell, based on a story by Ron D. White, Ninth Dawn. I think that's a degree of black belt. I'm not sure who plays the ninja in our film tonight.
Okay.
He came up with the story.
Director played the ninja.
No, the guy who came up with the story, Ron D. White.
The writer played the ninja.
The guy who came up with the story, yes. And then Marvin Trammell somehow transformed this into the
I think movie. I'm into go.
And you know what? I actually think spell check, I want to get this right, because I would hate to have a podcast talk about my movie forever and they fucked up my name.
Wait, you butchered Cigar Hustler's name left and right.
It's Parvin Trammell, not Marvin. Parvin Trammell is the director, writer of the movie tonight. We start with a Star Wars-like scroll of text across the screen. And here's what it says.
It was something. I don't know if it was Star Wars-like, but okay.
Well, it was Star Wars aesthetic, the text scrolling across the screen.
In the age of Atlantis.
For more than seven centuries, the art form known as ninjutsu has been handed down from generation to generation. It continued through the years as an unknown art in the West and a highly feared art in the East. Right through World War I and II, the legend of the ninja warrior was thought to be just that, a legend, because of the tales of the impossible feats reported by the local townspeople. Can the ninja really disappear, climb sheer cliffs, defeat numerous enemies at a time, fly through the air, or change his appearance like a chameleon? We may never know, because the ninja warrior has become extinct, .. until now.
They
all caps until now, underline it with an exclamation point.
That's how you know it's important.
After some pretty cool retro production company logos come and go, we're treated to an aerial shot of downtown DeSoto, Missouri, with a title card that reads Justice, Ninja Style, in a very stylish Three's Company-inspired font. Dude, that's the same font they use for Three's Company.
I'm sorry. There were so many things happening in this, in these opening. When the music started, I was looking around. It's like all of a sudden I was like, now it should be like a Sonic the Hedgehog should be running out. I was waiting for it to just skip over and turn into 8-bit graphics.
Dude, I'm going to go ahead and put this out there now. I love the soundtrack. I loved it. Brought back so many nostalgia feels. I loved the little 8-bit sound to it. I loved the arcade sound. It had that nice retro sound, that great 80s synthesizer stuff. Yeah. I thought the soundtrack, the soundscape, not the soundscape, but just the soundtrack was awesome.
I agree, Tut. And it was kind of like You know when you bought a keyboard in the 80s and it came with those pre it was like the predetermined tracks you could play, but then you could you could hit a few keys and play along with it. That's what this guy did.
And honestly, the whole Three's Company thing, now that you say it, I got that vibe. I was waiting for like the actors like to be walking out of stores and look at the camera and smile. Like,
come on, put on my key.
Oh, and I should look, say this. By area,
if they could have had it, but just walking by the Regal Beagle, I would have been fine. All right, you know.
I should add this by aerial shot. I mean, it was filmed with a camcorder from a rooftop. No helicopters were involved at any point in the production of this film, and that's totally okay.
I'm fairly certain it's the same camcorder they used to make all of the videos that you watched when you were taking your driving test.
Yes. This is a perfect place to mention that, yes, Yak Boy, tonight's film was shot on home camcorders or professional video cameras that would have been used in news reporting back in the day, or most likely both. These opening credit shots had me a little worried early on that we were in store for an all muddied kind of VHS camcorder visual, like it was shot through. I made these movies as a kid. They were shot through wax paper, but it does get better somewhat soon after. And I do respect how they owned it with the credit videography by Marty Reeder. He's not a cinematographer. He's a videographer. I like that. Own it. So we then tag along with two girls in their 20s as they drive from downtown out to the country.
Mid to late 30s, but okay.
And by tag along, we watch them drive from a distance. We're never inside the car with them. And so it's several long minutes of badly recorded banter about boys, music, what they're going to wear to the lounge later that night.
Man, the sound recording on this was
this whole movie, he never puts the camera in the car with anybody. We'll just film them driving around and we'll put it in later. But they get a flat tire and are forced to pull over in the middle of nowhere. I knew I should have gotten that spare tire yesterday, but I just didn't get around to it, brunette Shelley tells blonde Carol. Dude, she was gonna get a spare tire yesterday. She somehow saw this happening, and she didn't get it done. Shelley stays with the car as Carol casually heads off on foot solo in the direction of the nearby salvage yard. Boys, as I watched Carol and her booty-hugging guest jeans marching off into the horizon, it brought back some terrifying memories to me as a young person in Texas. Did you guys ever get stranded in a broken down car and have to walk off into the horizon for help?
Yes.
Oh,
it was terrifying.
I got stranded like at 2 a.m. and that car that pulls up beside you. Hey, you broke down and you have that little moment. Do I accept the help? Or do I run screaming for the woods?
Well, Tut, for me, it was, we grew up in Texas, home of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which take place in a little farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere. It looks, you know, pretty little white fence and whatever.
I remember the story.
My truck broke down driving home to my hometown one weekend from, Richard Linklater's own Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. And we set out on foot because you didn't have cell phones. That's all you could do. Yeah. And we came across this, there was a sign on the street, accounting business, Arrow. And we walked up to this house and there were these old ladies working there that were all at these little makeshift desks with their calculators. It was the weirdest. Luckily, the guy that was with me was a very Yak Boy, Brad Mayhew. Oh. He was the most handsome kind of aw shucks, like, hey ladies, our truck broke down. If it weren't for him, we would have been killed. But they got us a tow truck and somehow it worked out. But for every one of those stories, I remember a few years ago, probably about 8 or 9 years ago. We were driving to Corpus Christi in the middle of nowhere. And I saw a sign on the side of the road that said free dolls. And it had an arrow pointing to this house off the road in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, okay, well, that's a trap. That's clearly bait. Free dolls?
Well, it's either they're going to mutilate you or they're going to literally give you a cursed doll that will steal your soul.
But mutilation, yeah, the form.
But between the memory of me and Brad trying to find help for my truck and then that, it's like, man, when she just nonchalantly like, all right, I'll just walk off and find somebody. Like, I don't think women or men today are equipped to do such a thing. Head out on foot and just see what happens.
No, nobody's doing that today. We all have phones and that's not was it the first Jeepers Creepers, which was like 2001, where they're able to somehow plausibly pull off the fact that because the two characters are driving on like a country road, they can't get a signal, right? Like there's a Justin Long, like that guy's like, I can't get a signal because they got off the freeway or whatever. It's like, now you can't even do that.
No.
So nobody's, if you're driving on a country road somewhere, it's still going to have a service. You're still gonna be able to make a call from your phone or text somebody. No one's tricking off like that. That's a thing of the past for sure.
Well, back to Shelley waiting in the car. The filmmaker does a really unusual thing here where he lets us listen in on her thoughts. Presented as voiceover. Better you than me, Carol. What a drag. It's a little chilly, but the sun sure feels good, she thinks as she unbuttons her blouse and points her cones up at the sun. Yeah. Well, Shelley, what are you going to wear tonight?
Well, she's trying to be she's trying to use her assets to get help to stop.
Hey, no, we know that, Tud, because she tells us in her thoughts, maybe I'll wear that new pink blouse with the low cut, or I could wear the white one, or whatever. Oh, hey, what's that? She asks herself as a car approaches. The same cop car, by the way, it's been trailing them from the city.
So glad that we had that inner monologue. It reminded me kind of the women in the French New Wave, like the films of Jean-Luc Godard and François Truffaut. The woman sat back and gave us her inner thoughts.
I'll just act like I don't see them, Shelley thinks, which makes no sense as flagging down someone for help was the whole reason she stayed put. Oh, it's George and Grady. This is her mind. Oh, good. I bet with a little smile and that old Shelley charm, I'll get them to fix my car. Okay, Shelley, you're on.
It's go time.
When?
It goes from Godard and Truffaut to more Fellini-esque at that point, I would think.
I did see the lean towards Fellini. I agree with that. When, Doctor, in 129 years of cinema, can you remember a featured character who narrated out loud their every single thought? Tons of movies use voiceover, but it's always a character revealing or explaining things that he or she wants to share with the audience. This fucking chick thinks everything out loud. My booty hole itches. Wonder what's causing that. Here we are, Shelley. I guess I could reach back there and deal with it, but oh wait, a car's coming. I have to fart, but I might shit my pants. Tomorrow's grandma's birthday. What should I get her? Okay, I'm going to fart now and just see what happens. We literally have a inside view into everything that's going through this chick's head. I can't remember a movie where we ever had that before.
Hey, if you don't care, you don't scare.
It's crazy, and it's not the last time, and I don't care, that we'll see this technique used again. Well, it turns out that heavily mustached Officer Tuttle, oh, sorry, Officer George, who pulls over, has the hots for Shelley.
He did strike an imposing figure with that stash, so I can understand the confusion.
The feeling is not mutual. As his partner Grady fixes the tire, Shelley repeatedly pushes George, off of her as he tries to rape her. Finally, she knees him in the balls, and he counters with his billy club to the side of her head. I'm dead now, Shelley thinks out loud to us as she does. No, she actually doesn't do that. But she might as well. She's dead. Dude, he comes on to her right in front of his partner. He's going to just do her on the front of his cop car. And she fights back, and he kills her ass. As the two cops scratch their heads over what to do next, a jogging forehead with two legs zips by them down the road.
Hey, wait a minute.
Dude, you guys said it earlier. Holy foreheads, Batman.
Calm down.
There's nothing wrong with having a lot of forehead. There is nothing wrong with having a lot of forehead.
This plaid-wearing putz with the blow-dried bangs jogging around in his Bugle Boy jeans is the one and only Brad Tolan, who just opened up a new karate school in DeSoto. And to make extra cash, he projects movies on his forehead every Friday night on the outskirts of town. So Officer George asks Brad, hey, can you demonstrate the best way for me to handle a police baton? Or more specifically, my billy club that I just killed Shelly with? And the young dude reluctantly shows off his skills.
Oh, my God.
Even I could do that shit. He's just like spinning it around.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. I could do that. Well, now that George has Brad's fingerprints all over his stick, homoerotic fun tut style, that's our film next episode. He pins the innocent dude to his
cruiser. Works, I thought.
He pins that innocent dude to his cruiser, and the framing for Shelley's murder begins. But seriously, Brad's eyes and nose and mouth take up like 20% of his face, and they're all squished together down by the chin. Yaks, those are some load-bearing ears, am I right?
Indeed.
Out. Harsh.
I've never seen a forehead like this in my life.
There's some in-depth writing on it. There's a book I have. It's a comparison of the Parvin Trammell and Werner Herzog films. You know, you kind of, they really kind of go into how the different features of the face, are a key part of whatever this movie.
They say that the window, the eyes are the windows of the soul. And this guy's eyes are about 75% down from the top of his face. And what's up with that never-ending close-up of Chris Benoit's tight little muscular ass and those acid-wash jeans as the cops are handcuffing him?
I didn't really notice that, but
homoerotic fun tut style. I mean, Brad Tolan, not Chris Benoit. It was Brad.
When the camera gets a close-up of these buns, you notice.
It was Brad Tolan. It was Brad Tolan's firm little ass we watched shimmy and shake for like 30 seconds as the cops put the cuss on, not former WWE superstar Chris Benoit. Yax, did I use the word shimmy correctly there?
You did indeed. Okay. Spot on.
Excellent. Carol arrives with a tow truck driver just as Officer George pistol whips Brad unconscious. George tells Carol, who's distraught over her best friend's death for a shorter duration than that close-up of Brad's hard-chiseled ass lasted. George explains that Brad tried to rape Shelley, and then he killed her. Brad bopped George on the head with his baton, and it took both he and Officer Grady to subdue the karate expert. As they all speed off towards the city, it's revealed that there was indeed a sole witness to Shelley's murder. Hiding in the bushes. A ninja. There was a fucking ninja hanging out there watching all this shit go down.
And this is only the beginning.
I feel like, Yax, I feel like we've talked quite a bit about this movie already. And get this, we were only at the 10-minute mark.
You know what? I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it. Continue.
But I knew the first time I watched Justice Ninja Style that these first 10 minutes had just sealed its fate as the next featured film on the Tuesday Night Cigar Club. It didn't matter what happened in the next hour.
Obviously.
As we watched George and Grady pull their police cruiser up to City Hall with both the noise doctor and the cherries running, I might add. Correct.
Yeah, the noise and the cherries are. Yeah, they
Yeah,
were.
yeah. I really appreciated the city of DeSoto, Missouri, getting behind this shot on videotape homegrown production. We'll see fire trucks racing around later, a jail cell location. The local government supported this flick, by all accounts, in a lot of big ways. And that's very, very cool that they kind of embraced it, especially considering the movie portrays the local police department as a haven for murderous, rapists.
I was actually thinking about that.
They had a lot to do probably in DeSoto from the looks of it. There's probably a teeming community that was probably very hard for them to take time out of their day to pose for a few camera shots.
I know very little about DeSoto, so I don't know that. But yeah, I did think about it, like when it was doing the close-up of the DeSoto police logo, I was like, I wonder if they know that they're just being treated as corrupt.
Well, with the police chief being out of town on vacation until tomorrow, that leaves George and his reluctant accomplice Grady in charge, and Brad is quickly booked on a plethora of charges, including first-degree murder, assaulting a policeman, evading arrest, yada, yada, yada. In his cell, Brad tears long six-foot strips of his bed sheets, but alas, it's not enough material for him to construct a wearable headband.
Damn. Going harsh on him.
He acts liked it. No. He actually just starts to do some very bizarre breathing exercises mixed with some extremely bizarre arm movements. He was breathing out loud, so loud, while making those curved little python hands. I was waiting for a voiceover from him, like Shelley. Oops. I just exhaled so hard that I shit my pants. Damn it, Brad Tolan. You've gone and done it again. You're better than this. It doesn't happen,
just
but
watch these bugle boys.
But it will in a minute.
Wouldn't have surprised me.
Someone doesn't know the art of ninjutsu controlling their breath.
Tut's acting all indignant here. You guys didn't find this dude's forehead completely baffling?
I wasn't really focusing the fact on the forehead being baffling, other than the fact that the entire movie at this point is baffling.
I thought that it had a very Matt Gaetz quality to it, but I mean, he can't help it. It's not like he was sitting there in the womb and God was going, here are the foreheads that you can pick out. And he was like, oh, I want that one.
I guess I didn't really notice the forehead.
Yeah, say anything. Look at this forehead now.
Because I guess it really didn't stand out to me because Jesus Christ, this looked like something 13-year-olds with a VHS 8mm held. Of course I didn't notice his goddamn forehead. What the fuck, man? What the fuck? You know, I was watching this thing and I almost was like, you know what, man? I might retire tonight. I might just say, if this is what we're going to do, I retire. Well, Tut, one more. No, I didn't notice his forehead.
Hawk Manicus couldn't do it.
Happy Vice.
The creepy show of last week, we didn't do it. But Justice Ninja style forced the doctor into retirement.
Oh my God, man.
We're doing the Justice Cigar.
We could have just as easily reviewed Justice League the movie. I mean,
put that in your album.
No, I continued on. I persevered.
After a brief visit from an angry Carol and her cool cat city councilman father, and some more hassling from Officer George, Brad finally gets some shut-eye in his cell. And while he sleeps, he's visited by the ninja, the blue-eyed ninja. Yeah, so again, the ninja is played by a guy named Ron, and I'll just leave it at that. It's not so much a problem here as it is later. Carol thinks she sees the ninja as her and her cool as shit dad climb in his souped up canary yellow Camaro Z28.
That was Holy a swank shit. Ride, man. That was a swank ride. Not gonna lie.
Dude, my family up north had so many of those Camaro Z28. Like, everybody had one. But they were all
They still have them?
No, they were all like pigeon gray. They weren't canary yellow. They were just really kind of, I'm not kidding though. All my aunts, everyone had a Camaro Z28 in the '80s.
I was about to say there was a lot of Z28s running around East Texas, but they were all Bondo colored.
Well, Carol and her pops investigate the parking lot, but the ninja has disappeared into thin air. But wait, people can't disappear into thin air, can they, Todd?
Ninjas can.
Remember that thing where we heard Shelley's every thought in her head? Well, we go back to Brad's jail cell where he's now awake and thinking, and we as an audience member are given access to it. Well, Brad, only you could move out of the big city to the peace and quiet of a small town and wind up in a jail accused of a murder you didn't commit. At this point, the camera has been slowly pulling back from a tight shot on his face, and we still haven't even got half of his forehead in the frame. Now you got this hit cop planning on killing you to avoid a trial. Oh, man, Brad, you really know how to pick 'em, buddy. You really know how to pick 'em. We then get treated to a sequence showing the ninja in slow motion scaling buildings and jumping across rooftops in order to break into the jail. At least I thought it was in slow motion, but then there was an actual slow motion shot used of him leaping over something, and I realized all the previous stuff was full speed. He's just a really slow ninja.
Also, this is where it just really...
Props for the somersault.
There's a reason that the ninja, typically, that we think of wears black so that they can't be seen at night. In the middle of the high noon of all things, to crawl across a white roof and act like I'm sneaky, the building over there is looking down, going, why is that dude dressed all in black?
He's wide open on the roof. There's nothing around him, nothing to conceal him. Yet he's doing
Do the little barrel roll to like duck behind something.
I think as a ninja, you have to maintain a certain level of caution if you're a ninja, even if there are no threats around you. Am I right?
I mean, he would have to have literally just been throwing smoke bombs out. Smoke bomb, just.
I'm pretty sure they teach you in ninja school not to go into the open roof. Doc gets it.
He may be slow, but he's a crafty.
Doc's right there. He didn't go anywhere. He's just invisible ninja style.
Oh, he is. Oh, no, there he is. Listen, he may be a slow ninja, not Doc, the actual ninja, but he's a crafty ninja. Turns out he's ignited a trash fire across the street to distract the cop so he can rescue Brad from his cell, which he does. And just like that, the ninja disappears, leaving the bottom one-third of Brad's face dropped in disbelief.
Oh, man, poor Brad.
Brad leaps clumsily over a small shrub as he flees the jail, and the same can't be said for Officer George, who's running in hot pursuit.
Some sort of pursuit, yeah.
He attempts to clear the same little bush, but it takes him out, sending the cop spinning out across the grass. At one point, I thought I saw his mustache fly off.
It may have.
It probably did.
Speaking of spinning, Tut, do you know what cigar on the scene is making everyone's head spin?
Man, the cigar that makes my head spin. Is it the Blackened or is it the Shade to Black?
Blackened Shade to Black. You are right, my friend. Even though you technically didn't say anything. That's right. Following the resounding success of Drew Estate's partnership with Blackened Whiskey on Blackened Cigars M81 Maduro to the Core back in 2022, Drew Estate has dropped the new Connecticut Shade Wrap Blackened S84 Shade to Black. S84, referencing 1984 when their song Fade to Black came out on the Ride to Lightning album. The cigars are a passion project between Rob Dietrich, the master distiller and blender of Blackened Whiskey, James Hetfield, Metallica's co-founder, singer, and guitarist, and Jonathan Drew, founder and president of Drew Estate. Hetfield and Dietrich worked closely with Drew, a friend of Dietrich's for over a decade, I've been a friend with JD over a decade. Just saying. To create the perfect blend for the cigar, the blackened S84 Shade to Black takes aficionados on a nuanced journey with its deliciously smooth and inviting blend wrapped in a luxurious Connecticut Ecuador coverleaf. The consumer experience of this expression is distinctly different from the original while still retaining foundational qualities of the M81 due to the Connecticut River Valley Broadleaf Maduro binder and Nicaraguan Maduro and Pennsylvania Broadleaf Maduro filler leaves. Jonathan Drew exclaims, I just walked inside our humidor here at the headquarters and viewed the new white blackened box sitting alongside the original black Maduro. All I can say is, wow, it's so in your face. I love it. The new S84 Shade to Black is a must try for any Connecticut shade smoker. It's like a deep, dark, rich Connecticut that's smooth as silky velvet, plush with triple plushness. Rob Dietrich, Blackened's master distiller, has been one of my best friends for almost 15 years. Oh, see, he's got me. Now he says 15 years. Earlier it said 10 years. I don't think I've known JD for 15 years. He brought Hetfield into the mix. I brought Willie into the mix and the DE brand team. This project is dope and we're having fun with it. That's straight from the mouth of JD. And I think we may have mentioned the triple plushness in our review, if I'm not mistaken. Tut, you picked up on the triple plushness.
It blew my brain box, and apparently it proved Brad Tolan's brain box so big. That's why his head's like.
Hey, now you're getting on board. There you go. It's a fantastic smoke, folks, so go grab you one.
Sorry, and I feel ashamed.
Hey, forget Brad. I like the actor playing Officer George, a gentleman named Rick Reichardt. And holy shit, does he ever look like a Rick Reichardt? He never did anything again, and he's the one actor in
obviously.
This.
Obviously.
What?
He's the only actor in this movie that I think should have done something again. And get this. He's not a one-trick pony. He also edited tonight's film.
That makes sense.
And
Doctor?
Don't get me wrong. I figured, like, I mean, he has the exact look to be the third bad in episode 3 of Matt Houston, but that's not here nor there.
Doctor?
Yeah, but the third bad in episode of Matt Houston didn't say anything.
That's my point. It would have been so perfect.
No, here's why I'm getting at, because those guys who don't say anything, they deserve their moment in the limelight. Doctor, did he not remind you a little bit of that mustache deputy in Friday Part 6, Jason Lives?
The chief?
No, the chief's buddy who goes out and confronts Jason at the camp. He's got a sweet mustache.
Well, the dude that's like constantly like, he like looks himself in the mirror. He's like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Man, I'd have to go no, because the hair that
oh, dude, same hair. It's like that dude got his own police force and just went crazy.
George just has that hair.
Well, anywho, the fuzz almost traps Brad in the local junkyard, but he manages to clumsily escape again. He's tripping over. I don't know why the ninja's helping this dude. He's the farthest thing from a ninja. He's the most ungraceful. I don't know. Anywho, Brad ends up jogging out of town. A lot of jogging in this movie. And he's soon cornered against a barn by a bunch of hicks wanting to kick his ass. Fortunately, the ninja appears out of nowhere, and it is their redneck asses that are going to receive the kickings ninja style. I thought the fight choreography when the ninja was fighting that giant lumberjack dude, I thought it was kind of good.
Oh,
well, I'm glad you thought so.
I can't believe you know. Fight
there was literally a scene where the kick was delivered. There's like a 2-second wait, and then the response happened.
No, he's delivering.
It was in slow motion. Okay, it was in slow motion.
He's delivering solid body blows to this huge dude, all the while Brad is rolling around giggling like an idiot. Hey,
body slamming become part of the ninjutsu code.
Dude, Brad's over there on the sidelines. Hey, what's wrong, Farmer? Aren't you gonna take him on?
Oh God! And then
Brad keeps egging him on. What you gonna do now, huh? So the giant picks the ninja up over his head. I thought at that point the ninja might break his code of silence. Like, hey, Brad, how about you shut up? Shut the fuck up for a minute.
Like, when did Brad turn into the? Do you know who his brother is?
Do you know who my brother is? Anyway, nonetheless, no worries. As the ninja flips the script, swiftly spins around. Dude, you guys weren't impressed by this? The ninja fucking body slams this massive dude to the ground. And then he punches the poor guy in the face.
If this was a movie about a WWE personality called the Ninja, who was just some white guy wearing a mask and body slammed the dude, I might be impressed. And that's a very loose definition of the word might. But because it's a ninja, man, body slamming isn't in the ninja playbook.
Well, the ninja disappears and Brad tells thin air his whole life story. And then the warrior, for some reason, after hearing Brad's life story, reappears. With a nod of his cloaked head, a bond is formed. Unfortunately, though, when the ninja was nodding his head down, it collided with Brad's forehead, and the ninja was instantly put in a coma. You see, Yax, there are some situations in life that even the ninja can't prepare or be ready for. And just for the record here, I'd like to state the TNCC is pro-ninja. Am I right? We love ninjas.
We do.
I want to be clear on that.
We love all of them, but we do in fact love ninjas.
I'm more of a samurai guy.
Possibly not this ninja.
You got a problem with a ninja named Ron?
Kinda, yeah.
Now, this next scene really threw me for a loop, and I know it wasn't a purposeful mislead by the filmmaker, but I'm dying to hear if you guys got sucked into it like I did.
No.
We cut to the Cobra Karate School owned by Brad and his perfectly mustached buddy, Dan. I can't be the only one here who thought this. We watch as his partner, Dan, and his mustache enters the room and karates the shit out of one of the students. And I'm sitting here thinking, there's no fucking way Officer George is teaching this karate class.
I thought it was George.
Did you guys think it was the bad cop George teaching the karate class?
Yes.
Oh, I was misled.
It was very confusing. But tell you, and yes, it took a minute to realize, wow, everybody looks like this.
I watched it thinking that was George and his mustache kung fu fighting. It was blowing my mind. Like, I never saw that dude being a martial arts guy. It wasn't until the next scene when Dan is chain smoking in the pool hall with the curvy blonde waitress that I realized this was a new different character with a new different mustache. But they look really similar, right?
It's DeSoto.
Yes.
Doctor, you didn't think that was the...
No, I didn't think Dan... I mean, the fact that they have mustaches and the kind of curly mullets... there's a similarity there, but I never thought they were actually the same character. I just thought it was funny that they were Cobra Karate, and obviously you have the Cobra Kai.
I think this was actually before the Cobra Kai, wasn't it? This was like
85. When did
Greg? Okay, never mind. I was thinking it was 81, but that was the last film. All right, go ahead.
Three out of the four of us thought it was the Crooked.
I really did.
And I was so confused. I was like, his personality, like I didn't see any of that.
By the way, I did find those sweet, sweet Cobra shirts online. Someone selling them for like $23. I might have one on the way.
Oh, just one?
This movie? A Cobra Karate or a Cobra Kai from the Karate Kid?
Cobra Karate. This movie.
With the Cobra?
With the Cobra on it.
And you bought us each one?
I didn't say that.
Granted, I have the full Johnny Lawrence Cobra Kai outfit from the tournament, the sleeveless black shirt and the black pants that, and I wear that
the best version.
But, wow.
Well, I think we can all agree on this. The way that Dan, he's his own man. He's not George, the police officer. Dan, the karate guy.
Yeah, man, it's my I'm my own man.
The way he struts out of the building with his shoulders projected forward and his cut off black tee, pocket knife sheath on his hip, you know immediately this dude knows how to fight and this dude knows how to party.
He knows how to party. You know,
Dan. Also, that this man has never actually lifted a single weight in his entire life.
Oh,
just
no.
Cigarettes,
he's,
my
no,
friend.
He's totally
just
soft.
Cigarettes.
He's totally soft. Brad approaches Dan in the dojo's parking lot, fills him in on everything, including the ninja, and then they drive off in Dan's sweet Chevy Citation. Dude, I've never in 167 episodes been more shocked by a character getting into a car. Dude, that dude strolls out of there in that cut-off shirt. He's got his knife, tattoos. He's like,
it's like the Linklater film, Dazed and Confused, where they're going into the, here comes the fun.
It was the hurricane. He was the hurricane. And then he's like, all right, get in the car. It's a Chevy Citation, which is basically a Pacer. A GMC Pacer had sex with a gremlin and they gave birth to the Chevy Citation.
How much and money is he like, going to make teaching karate in bumfuck Missouri?
And there's like a 2-minute sequence of him reversing out of the parking lot and driving off.
No, once again, that was in slow motion. That just, takes time.
Well, apparently there's an empty house on the edge of town called the Parker Place, and Dan is taking Brad there to lay low for a while. Carol drops her smooth operator daddy-o off at the lounge. Don't wait for me, honey. I'm going to have some beers and watch the game with the boys. Am I the only one who loved Carol's dad?
Yes.
That's, I mean, he was a character.
He clearly had a... I mean, if you're going to wear a wig, why would you have a wig of a comb-over? Like, if you're going to wear a wig, get a real wig. But his wig was like a bad comb-over wig.
Hey, you got him a city council spot.
Exactly.
And he was only 39 years old.
And as she's leaving the lounge, she's approached by a chick named Cindy and her bearded lover, a real mover and shaker named Nick.
Yeah, and Nick.
And they offer their condolences about Shelley. Are you playing a show tonight? Carol asked Nick. Oh, yeah. The whole band.
Oh, yeah. Band's going to be there and everything.
The whole band's here. I got a special song I've written just for you. Better come by and listen to it. With that exciting news to everyone but Carol, hey, I wrote a song for you. All right, whatever. They part ways as Carol pulls out of the parking lot. Oh, and get this. The camera pans over to the Hickory Lounge's sign, and then it zooms on the marquee, Nick Nixon appearing tonight. So we'll get to hear that song Nick wrote for Carol. Nope. That's it. We never see Nick Nixon again, damn it. What a weird tease.
He got cut in editing.
I'm going to tell you, you did not do your research, sir, because me, who has been making fart noises and making fun of this abject piece of shit all night, looked up Nick Nixon is actually a minor country singer. That dude, if you look at, you can go to Wikipedia. Nick Nixon was a songwriter and minor country person from the 70s from Missouri.
But they hyped it up like, are you playing here tonight, Nick? And he hypes up the song. We show the marquee and close up Nick Nixon tonight. That's it. We never go back and hear Nick Nixon play.
Wow, it's
I
almost
the feeling
like
the that Nick Nixon maybe caused some trouble behind the scenes and they nixed everything else.
Or Kay,
I'm with,
it's
I'm with
like
Yax.
The filmmakers didn't know their asses from a hole in the ground and didn't know what the fuck they were doing and just made pieces.
I'm with Yax. I think Nick Nixon did something.
As someone who has tried to produce some of this stuff,
here comes the Nick Nixon apologist.
I'm just saying it's hard to film a band when you're on this low of a budget. They heard the sound and they decided to cut the scene.
Tut, well, did you ever work on the Nick Nixon tour?
I think I have, actually.
You think you might
have?
He was
there. He remembers all of it.
I think Travis Tritt once traded me to Nick Nixon for a while.
Was that a thing where you could trade human beings?
Yeah, it was.
Of course.
Don't you remember? It was an Almost Famous. They trade one chick to the other, one band to the other band.
No, those were groupie chicks. They trade.
Oh, Travis Tritt traded Tut to Nick Nixon.
Piano players are just the same thing, man. Travis got pissed at me one time, and I think for like 4 months, vaguely, I remember being a Nixon.
For a case of Bud Light and.
I thought it was the Stevie Nicks tour, but it turned out to be Nick Nixon.
If Tut's answers frighten you, Cade, cease asking scary questions.
Wise words. I will do so. After dropping Brad off for a shift at Wonka's Chocolate Factory with all the other Oompa Loompas, I'm sorry, I mean the Parker place, Dan gets pulled over and roughed up by Officer George. Dan finally defends himself, man to man, mustache to mustache. But when George, here's when I was convinced it was a different dude at the karate place than George, because these guys are actually fighting each other now. The dudes that I thought were the same guy.
That's a great green screen work, man.
When George unholsters his service revolver, a Shuriken Ninja Star soars in out of nowhere and bops him on the wrist, causing him to drop the gun. That had
the
to be.
Most unsharp shuriken in ninja history.
It was a children's piece of plastic. It was like George's gun. You guys didn't laugh when George pulled out that Lone Ranger silver pistol?
It pierces no skin, but that had to be the ninja, right?
Sure.
Well, that's what Dan thinks, and we know this because we hear his innermost thoughts. As he picks up the star, Dan, a shuriken star. Well, Brad must have been telling the truth the whole time. There really is a ninja. Well, I'll be damned.
In that specific
Look,
tone.
At least this movie is trying some new stuff. No movie ever has given us this insight into the character's thought process.
I'm going to go with... Nah, it doesn't matter.
Well, it turns out,
if he was a big Magnum PI fan, dude.
It turns out, Yax, that Carol is conveniently headed to the abandoned Parker place where Brad is to inexplicably do some cleaning and keep her mind off all the stress of her best friend dying. Whatever. She pulls a rifle on the snoozing Brad, but she's unable to fully resist his giant forehead charms. Dan shows up and Carol forces them both out the front door at gunpoint. Suddenly,
and
she gets hit.
Karate guys aren't very good.
No, suddenly she gets hit by a blowgun dart in the hand, courtesy of the ninja, and Dan grabs her rifle. Since they don't shoot her and kill her, Carol decides they can all be friends now and she'll help them prove Brad's innocence.
Yes, but it would have been better if it wasn't like the actual like plastic end tip blowgun dart
was.
That you would buy at like, 1980s Academy.
Yeah. Yep.
Same thing they got when they picked up George's Lone Ranger pistol at the toy aisle of the 1984 Albertsons.
The Allsips.
We'll give this to Dan and let him shoot. It was like, I was surprised it didn't have like a Nerf ending on the end of it. Like it was a Nerf dart.
When a cop shows up, pistol drawn, Carol knees the poor bastard in the nuts before the
she made me into growing.
Before the ninja and his nunchucks finish the guy off, and the masked mystery man disappears in a ball of fire. Exit, ninja style. Have I mentioned how much, by the way, I love the sound effect whenever the ninja kicks somebody?
Man, the doctor exits the kid. Where did he go?
I'll kick him. Dude, they
honestly, in some of the fight scenes, like I said, I was going to wait until the leg just flipped over to the 1980s Kung Fu video game. Red and white guy fight me, just kicking each other.
I love that game, by the way.
Oh, that was light years better than anything that was in this movie.
Listen, Brad, Dan, and Carol run to yet another farm.
Oh, that's harsh.
Where they stop to catch their breath. Brad fills an inquisitive Carol in on the history of the ninja, how they came out of China and Japanese folklore. And then he sends her off with a not gentle smack on the ass to go with Dan to find the police chief for help. Dude.
She turned warm really fast, and I love that little.
Dude, they
smack
give a little peck on they give a little peck on the cheek, but then he fucking smacks that ass. That's reason alone to talk about this movie.
Surprised he didn't make a comment about how much knowledge he had stored inside that noggin is.
Well, I mean, he's got 80% more storage space than, you know, the rest of us. He's got some horny ideas, Doctor, brewing in that cerebral silo of his. you can see it in his beady little eyes. Back in town, Officer George is holding a town meeting in a local diner. And they actually packed this place with real locals, which is kind of harder than it sounds. I filmed a movie in my hometown, and I tried to get a college campus rally together. Dude, I got like 5 or 6 locals that would come out and like be out in this. Dude, this place is packed with people that are actually paying attention to what he's saying.
Big hat. Walked in there at dinner time and said, everybody who looks at the camera is going to get a free dessert.
It worked. He's basically asking for the townsfolk's help in capturing or killing fugitive Brad Tolan. And it's hilarious, though, seeing all these middle-aged women's big teased-up hair and close-ups as with their confused expressions as they listen to George explain what a ninja is. He's like, they can disappear. They can shoot fireballs. And there's like a chick like, don't know what the hell he's talking about.
When she was out for her Friday night chicken fried steak in DeSoto, Missouri. You know, the thought process is more like, am I supposed to look at that red light or what?
Well, dude, he pulls out the ninja star. He calls it, we found this ancient medallion out of his pocket. And a busboy, who's clearly not Japanese,
oh my God,
runs out of the room shouting, ninja, ninja. Great. Now who the hell's going to do my dishes, says Clyde, the restaurant owner. That Japanese family's been here since just after World War II. He'll be back, George fires back. Now forget about him, and let's figure out what we're going to do about Brad Tolan. You mean to tell me, in all of DeSoto, Missouri, St. Louis is 45 minutes away. There's not one Asian dude you could hire to be the dishwasher or, wait for it, the ninja. Let the Ron dude do the fighting, but when you close to the close-ups of the ninja's eyes talking about his Japanese heritage, how great would that be to have an Asian dude?
My guess is they probably approached some Asian dudes to play in this movie, and the Asian dude said, go to hell.
You might be right. You might be onto something there. Anywho, George deputizes every man, woman, and child in the diner, and the manhunt for Brad Tolan begins. But seriously, it's clearly a guy that looks like you, Tut. Ninja! Ninja! Oh, and one guy's like, what do you say? And the other dude's like, I don't know. I don't speak Japanese. It's a white dude.
It's the Statler and Waldorf were cool. I thought I liked them, right?
It's the whitest of dudes.
Yeah, and they really broke the pattern there because the production value and the thought processes have been so good until then.
A truckload of freshly deputized dipshit spot MODOK running around in broad daylight aimlessly in the park.
I'm sorry, I love rednecks in the back of a truck. It's cinematic gold.
We all do. But they spot MODOK running around in broad daylight aimlessly, the sun rays bouncing off his forehead. I'm sorry, I called him MODOK. He's Brad Tolan. MODOK was a Marvel character with a giant forehead. And unlike the ninja, Operating in the shadows means absolutely nothing to Brad Tolan. I'm wondering why the ninja's helping this doofus. He's like, okay, broad daylight, I'm safe here. I'm going to go run across this field. Like, he's begging to be found. He begins battling them, and luckily he's soon aided by the actual ninja. I like the new move the ninja showed here, where he kicks a dude in the dick, and when the guy falls down, he pummels him in his face. That was a good move.
Classic.
Yeah, you gotta respect that. There's also these two worn down cowboys in the park. One looks like kind of Willie Nelson, and he's playing a guitar and singing the blues while Brad fights off the rednecks.
I like rednecks.
I like red nuts.
That fits like with this film.
There's this old Willie Nelson guy playing his guitar and he's singing while Brad is punching these dudes in the balls. Yeah. There's a lot going on in this park.
What I love more than anything else is that, considering that this film takes place just decades ago, is that Willie Nelson's image has not changed since then. No, he looks as he does today.
Exactly.
I started to sing Whiskey River because I wanted to be taken somewhere.
I agree.
Brad runs off again.
I'm barely hanging on at this point.
Brad runs off yet again and finds shelter in yet another barn, all while Dan and Carol are running all over town as well. A deputy sees them running across the highway to use a payphone. Then they run out in the country again to find Brad. They both own fucking cars.
Yeah, but the cars are being watched by the town folks, man.
Carol has a convertible. Adam drives that boss-ass Chevy Citation. Why are they running everywhere?
Once again, it's almost like the filmmakers just didn't know what they were doing. I can't.
George and Grady corner Brad, Dan, and Carol in an old barn. Officer George is about to shoot them in cold blood when Officer Grady grows a pair and says, George, I can't let this happen, which results in George pistol whipping Grady unconscious. George refocuses his aim on Brad, and suddenly the ninja appears and attacks. All hell breaks loose as the ninja battles George, eventually catapulting him through the sky, and the crooked cop lands on a sharp piece of farm equipment, killing the son of a bitch. Fortunately, he was an organ donor, and his mustache was successfully transplanted to a baby-faced teenager kid over at the karate school. So that's a good thing. We like to see that kind of stuff happen. Just as great as Officer Grady regains consciousness, the chief finally shows up in the barn. The chief they keep talking about showing up.
What the hell's going on in here? Hey, I'm going to clean this up right now.
He's fresh from vacation. Grady explains everything that's happened to the chief, detailing how his partner George was responsible for it all. And what about this masked fellow who killed George? Where's he? The chief asked the room. Hey, chief. Answers Brad Tolan. He's around. He'll always be around. Hey, Brad, how about you shut the fuck up? Like, that's not helping you. Like, just be quiet. And in the final scene, we learn why that is. While everyone catches a ride with the cops back to town, moron Brad decides to walk, even though he's been running nonstop for days. And that's exactly how he got into this mess in the first place. He decides to walk back into town. And he stumbles across the ninja who's bowing down at a cheesy gravestone with Japanese writing on it. Dan told me about a Japanese family living here, Brad says. They came here to escape all the West Coast hatred and after Pearl Harbor. That was your family, wasn't it? He asked the ninja.
Now they've been buried in a gray shoebox in this field.
You know,
the clearly Caucasian ninja, played by a dude named Ron, nods his head. They bow to each other once again in respect, and the ninja disappears in the wind. The end.
Honestly, I thought it would have been a lot better if they left that part out, got rid of the shoebox, And the ninja takes it off and he's like, it's a Scooby-Doo ending. Old man Carruthers. But
no, the sheriff was the ninja all along.
Because I would have liked, I would have gotten away with it too if it hadn't been for you damn kids.
It would have made so much more sense, just out of the blue.
It wouldn't have.
I would have.
Or even better, he actually was in the fight. He takes it off, and he's the Willie Nelson impersonator.
Oh, if Willie Nelson was under the ninja vest, that would have been. But he had a mustache.
It made perfect sense. I didn't care at this point. I was ready for it to be done.
Oh God.
Well, obviously, I had to find a film centered around justice for a Justice Cigar tonight.
There were so many. I mean, if only someone had made something about justice. Any justice whatsoever.
Dude, we could have done the Liam Neeson, Patrick Swayze, the redneck movie about justice.
Wasn't there like a Steven Seagal, like no justice?
No, Seagal
did for justice.
Seagal did Out for Justice, but that was before he was Seagal we could make fun of. He was kind of normal.
Wait.
No, he wasn't.
He never was normal.
He didn't have his ponytail.
Have you even seen a Seagal movie?
He didn't have his ponytail in Out for Justice, damn it.
I'm fairly certain he had something.
Just go with it. You can't defend this choice.
Actually, I think you're right. I think Above the Law was where he didn't have the ponytail. I think Out for Justice was later on. You might have been right. And you know what? We only have two shows to go, but we will get to a Steven Seagal movie. But tonight wasn't the night. Tonight was the night for Justice Ninja Style. And let me say this. Back in 2018, God, was that 5 years ago? On episode 72, we featured Robot Ninja and chatted with its director, the legendary J.R. Buchwalter. But that's it as far as ninja movies are concerned. I think maybe Miami Connection had some ninjas in it. That's it.
They pop up every now and then. That's what ninjas do.
So I'm going to ask you guys, since you had such big problems with tonight's film, what's y'all's
Cade, please, before we do that,
yeah,
I will say this. It. As much shit as I've given this movie, or I feel towards this movie, it does push my commentary that as long as the film has heart, I will appreciate it. And while I don't think I appreciate this film, I do think it had heart. I mean,
it did.
The dude who was trying to do something. And
yes.
Yeah, the actors weren't good. The cinematography wasn't good. The audio, in terms of like dialogue recording and recording the actors, was horrible. The soundtrack, A+. But I did feel like it had heart. I did feel like they weren't phoning it in. They were trying to go for something.
Tut, you never felt like they were walking through it. They were trying to make something here.
Every scene, I thought they were trying to do something. Even though they weren't equipped to do it.
They tried. They tried like hell.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a learning disabled kid with a load of shit in his pants playing with a wad of Play-Doh is probably trying to do something.
I disagree, man.
They're not trying to do something?
I have seen a lot. I have unfortunately spent a lot of hours watching shot on video 80s horror movies.
I will say this, dude. If you had the choice between two movies, this or a high dollar J-Lo Atlas, watch this.
There you go. This has heart. This does have heart. And they did try.
I hope to never watch this again, but
I don't see any circumstance in the plausibility of the universe where you would have to. But let me ask you guys this. What is y'all's favorite ninja movie or favorite ninja character in general in the motion picture? Because we're all kids of the 80s. Ninjas were huge. Ninjas were everything. And I wanted to be a ninja in the 80s more than I wanted to be Arnold. I wanted ninjas were such a big deal in the 80s. Obviously, you're not going to pick Ron in Justice Ninja Style. But what personification of a ninja works for you in cinema? I'll start with you, Tut.
Man, that you shouldn't have, because I'm just.
I'll start with you, Yakboy.
No, I know. I'll go. I wasn't that big into ninjas. I was more of a Kung Fu, Bruce Lee, samurai guy. So I really didn't. There's not anything. I mean, okay. What Storm Shadow from G.I. Joe? That dude was
okay. Snake Eyes.
No,
it was there.
My favorite of all is the Beverly Hills Ninja.
Yes.
And then outside of that would be Donatello. I mean, that is a
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. You could have also gone, if you were going to go comic book, you could go, you know, adolescent radioactive black belt hamsters, but that's completely different.
Donatello.
Look, 80s, you got two things. We'll take Gymkata and throw that out. That's not ninja. That's just freak. Michael Dudikoff, American Ninja.
American? That's like the only one.
Or best 1984, Lee Van Cleef, The Master. Come on!
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's bad. It was
honestly, yeah, it's hard for me to, cause The Master was an ABC series.
Yes.
Where, of all people, fucking Lee Van Cleef played a fucking ninja.
But at least, like, the ninja effects were, like, on point. The ninjas weren't operating on a rooftop in the middle of daytime. He was climbing walls, like, in an alley in the dark, like, invisible.
I fell in love with 1983's Revenge of the Ninja. That was the flick that made me beg my mom to buy me a pair of tabby boots. I was obsessed with Braden, that evil drug dealing ninja that had the silver mask, death mask. He is kind of Destro-esque from G.I. Joe. He wore under his ninja stuff. He was also a blue-eyed white dude, but they never said otherwise in the script. So I was okay with it. So Tut, you don't really know about ninjas. Yak Boy?
No, I didn't say I didn't know about ninjas. I had a shuriken. I had a butterfly knife. I just wasn't that, you know, cinematically, I wasn't that wrapped up.
Hey, funny story. Back in the 80s, I was flying to Ohio to spend the summer with my family, and Austin Airport security found a butterfly knife in my bathroom bag, and they pulled me out of security, called me in there. My mom had to come over there.
I will say that I think the butterfly
knife. But this was the 80s, and then they handed it back to you and let you on the plane.
No, they just said, we're not going to give back to you, but yeah, I was able to move on. Doctor, do you have a signature favorite ninja from cinema? Because mine is that 1983 Revenge of the Ninja is so clear with the silver mask. He was shooting fire out of his fists. That to me just solidified what I loved about ninjas. He had all the tools. Doctor, did you have anything like that?
No, I think you guys kind of covered everybody. I wasn't really too much into the ninja genre. There was a horror movie, and it featured that hot chick that was in the breakdancing movie Breakin'. Lucinda Dickey, I think was her name. It was called like Ninja the Dominion or something like that, where she like gets possessed.
That's Ninja. That's actually the third in my series. That's a Ninja Part 3. She gets completely possessed, and that is a bonkers, awesome, crazy movie.
I remember that one, and then I just have a soft spot for. It wasn't too long ago I rewatched Spies Like Us, and when Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase are first become special agents and get dropped into the forest for their training exercise. Some guys in ninja gear come out, and one of them,
Bernie Casey, kicks all their asses. I love
Bernie
that.
Casey kicks all their asses, but it's just funny because before Bernie Casey shows up, you hear one of them go, "Wah!" And Chevy Chase just like looks down. He's like, "Was that me?" He like holds his stomach and who did that? And then the guys all come out with their swords, and Chase pulls his wallet out and he goes, "All right, this is my sister. You can all have her. I hear she's quite good." Stop right there. I'll bring back the sun. So that was a ninja scene. But no, I guess other than that horror movie, I don't really have a penultimate ninja movie character.
Okay. I'm getting the sense that maybe I have a much more nostalgic view of ninjas than anybody else here.
No. I love ninjas.
But having said that, did this movie spark some of that nostalgia for you? Did you?
Yo, no. None of it.
I'll return to a comment I made earlier.
I mean, this was nowhere close to Snake Eyes.
It's not wrong.
Or Storm Shadow. This was nowhere close to even Judikoff being a ninja. Or Lee Van Cleef being a ninja. Or Revenge of the Ninja. Or any of the other ninja of the 80s.
It was a dude named Ron. It was a dude named Ron being a ninja.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And how are you expecting someone named Lee Van Cleef to be a ninja?
Well, this
movie. Why was he more realistic doing it?
No, it does now that there's a guy named Ron doing it.
Remember how at the beginning you said when you were making, you said you were hoping that the production value didn't take it on a certain path. She said, "Yeah, when I was, you know, an adolescent, I made those kind of. I know I worked with you on those movies when we had a handheld VHS camera. They were better than this. We did better."
Well, unfortunately, this is the only ninja movie we'll ever do on the show. So I'm glad you all embraced it. You all loved it.
Oh, no.
We can.
I get the feeling you guys are probably going to all watch it again tonight.
No.
Probably.
I'm going to go home and cry.
I'm going to watch it.
Tut, give us some links.
Oh, gosh. Ninja! So you can hit us up on Instagram at TNCC_podcast. Hit us at the Tuesday Night Cigar Club on our Facebook page. Obviously, subscribe to us at Tuesday Night Cigar Club on YouTube. If you want to buy the cigars tonight or any cigars, man, hit up our website. Go to the Famous Smoke banner. Click on that. It'll automatically enter a promo code TNCC20, which gets you $20 off of your purchase of $100 or more, and that'll knock down those prices to a acceptable point.
Todd, when we broadcast this episode, can you do the TNCC20 promo code across your giant forehead? I think that would really grab viewers' attention.
I check your fax machine for once, asshole.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us. I think you will have a lot of fun listening to us talk about Justice Ninja Style. And next episode, homoerotic fun, Tut Style.
But some that's of my best work.
I won't be here for that one.
It's a couple weeks away. And
some of my best work, Mincy. You know, you were there.
We got to prepare for that one. Okay. But in the meantime, do everything you can to not let Lady Liberty, or is it Justice?
There's two ladies. There's a Lady Justice and a Lady Liberty.
There's Lady Justice, yes.
Who do we not let lose a feather?
The wings
of the wings.
May the wings of liberty.
What were you drinking tonight?
I did have a Four Loko pre-show.
Let me do it.
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather. Sayonara, motherfuckers. And that's the most Japanese shit you're going to get out of this episode tonight. See you next
time. Ninja.
Ninja. Ninja. Bye.
To learn more about the time I hand-delivered some righteous karate moves of my own, please rent the 1987 shot on video classic, Justice, Keith Style, starring, you guessed it, me, Keith A. Howell. The storyline is basically me taking on an army of vicious and exceptionally horny ninjas with nothing but my trusty sword and a handful of deadly Benoit balls. Oh yeah, spoiler alert. Instead of grabbing my lethal bola balls while rushing out of the dojo to deliver some classic Justice Keith style, I accidentally grab my roommate Jeff's Benoit balls, which are designed for a vastly different purpose. Yeah, that's right, my roommate Jeff's. Yeah. Well, needless to say, a few hours later, I had not only defeated those asshole ninjas, but I'm pretty sure they couldn't sit down comfortably for at least a week or so. And if any of you get a bright idea and start looking into the existence of my former roommate Jeff, don't. Just don't, or you'll be facing Justice Keystyle. Jeff exists, and you're just going to have to trust me on this. It's not the first time it's come up, but the first time I've accidentally picked up something of Jeff's when I should have grabbed something very different of my own, so trust me on this. Or else. So, if you just want to learn more about the cigars enjoyed on tonight's episode, please visit CigarHustler.com. For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BriensTemple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying, until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.
Over, folks, all right? The party is starting.